Lakewood. It was only a municipal court, and yet the precedent set by Judge Clayton Horn's opinion has held up all these years. It opened the floodgates which allowed the Grove Press in New York, for instance, to publish Henry Miller's
afternoon, and welcome to Tickling the Belly of the Beast from the heartland of Santa Cruz. And you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. That's on your online www.freakradio.org. And I'm Janaea, and I'm going to be your host today from 2 until 5. And for the first hour, from 2 to 3, we're going to be learning about many mansions in Santa Cruz that are definitely haunted, and you'll hear stories that literally will make the hair on the back of your neck curl. Trust me in this. And again, we're going to be speaking with Julia Elizabeth Lonergan. I spent some time with her last night, and I still haven't recovered. And then from 3 to 4, we'll be speaking with Lewis Bickford. He's a Native American veteran, about the warrior tradition, as well as what's going on with the Native American veterans today. And then back again from 4 to 5 is Dr. Wilson, Babe Wilson, Darryl Wilson. And he's back to share some more amazing stories. He's the storyteller extraordinaire here in California, and I would say throughout the nation. But I want to get started with Julia. Hi, Julia. Welcome
Hi,
back.
Thank you.
I just want to say a little bit about her. Her first book was the same, The Haunting of Mission Santa Cruz, Mexico, from 1708 to 1876. And we're going to be delving into Volume 2. And she has an MA in International Relations from New Mexico State University and has an MS in Cognitive Psychology as well from UCSC. And also, the second author of the book, I really want to plug her. She's an amazing young woman. Her name is Angelica Siena. How do you pronounce her last name?
Garasoli.
And she just graduated from high school?
No, she actually just graduated from junior high into high school.
Oh, my God, she's so mature.
Yeah, she's a little artist, and she works with art at the same level that I do. And I've been working as an artist for more than 20 years. She's an amazing little girl.
She really is.
She lives in a piece of the Magnolia Rose that the book deals with. And yeah. Actually, a lot of the paradoxes that we started to disambiguate together was like a little teamwork. She's lived in this mansion since she was 7. Her mother and father acquired it, and her little sister and herself moved in when they were 5 and 7 years old. And their first picture is at the top of the main staircase mm-hmm. in the Bayview Hotel, and this mm-hmm. is also a piece of the Magnolia Rose that was in Capitola that we've been dealing with so far and what the book deals with.
Listeners that are hearing you mm-hmm. for the first time, she's been on 3 times, and I'm going to have her on once a month now. Tell us a little bit about the Magnolia Rose.
Yeah.
What it represented. And then we can get into
the details of the haunting.
Yeah, the hauntings.
So we're trying to pin down now the hauntings in each of these mansions. And we spend a lot of time structuring the history and the context of the lives of the people during the years, during the 1700s and through the 1800s. The Magnolia Rose was a magnificent mansion that was built on the Capitola Esplanade that actually faced southwest.
And that's important. And you want to tell us why?
Yeah, directionality was very important to the southern Spanish, because largely the culture is an Eastern-oriented culture where mm-hmm. they use, for example, the lunar calendar. So very often the commencement actually of the lunar calendar is the Eastern equinox position. So East and Southwest are very significant positions for our predecessors actually to this land.
Mm-hmm.
There were very important buildings that were built here. So the Magnolia Rose was one of these buildings. It actually was a landing site in the Monterey Bay when Capitola was the capital of North Mexico. Moved here from Alviso in 1832.
Now, where was Alviso?
Alviso is the city, water city, north of San Jose that is entered by a tributary called the River Guadalupe, or it comes from Moroccan Arabic, Guadalquivir. Mm-hmm. It means big river. And this word is a Spanish Arabic, and it predates the idea of the apparitions of the Virgin of Guadalupe. It's where we think we get the name, you know, the Virgin of Guadalupe. But it's actually Moroccan Arabic, and Guadalquivir means big river. And that's actually what the Rio Grande is named, the big river, the brave, the strong river. So the Magnolia Rose faced southwest on the Capitola Esplanade, and right now this mansion actually has been erased from history. They staged a fire sometime between 1890 and 1907.
Now, who staged the fire?
So remember we were talking about this group called the Bango Boys.
Yes.
And this was a group of Freemasons that actually were a breakaway group of radical fundamentalists, Christian fundamentalists.
From the East Coast that wanted to grab the land.
They started from the East Coast Spanish and they made it all the way to the West Coast. So these things were going on the East Coast as early as 1623.
This was very valuable land.
The whole United States, all the way to California.
Yep, that's why they wanted it, and it was ripe for, they thought, the taking.
Well, it was ripe for the taking because they had exercised the skills of conquest.
And they learned
And
that.
These skills of conquest, they were brutal, but they actually involved something that we don't look close enough at, which is this concept of colonization. And how are we colonizing? Really, what's interesting about colonization, it was taking place inside the Catholic churches. There was mm-hmm. very systematic rape of women and mm-hmm. killing to have orphans that had big wealth. And
we'll talk about some of those families, too, that had the land stolen from them.
So, yeah, the Spanish land grant that was here was called the San Andres land grant. And so the book deals with the Castros and how the Castros were murdered here in Santa Cruz. And all of a sudden, Hines, yes, of the ketchup, and Samuel Prescott Bush, who went under a pseudonym
here.
These
are two Bango Boys.
These are two of the Bango Boys. So in book two, we detail more the history of what happened after the American Civil War here in California, when we have these Eastern Seaboard ex-governors of Tennessee and Georgia and Massachusetts coming to California under Abraham Lincoln. And they were coming to do like...
Under Abraham Lincoln.
So this is before 1865. This is before the American Civil War.
Yes.
Before Lincoln's assassination. People
but
came
then it
to
makes
California.
You really wonder why he was assassinated. What
yeah.
was behind that in regards to the story that's unfolding as we speak?
So on the Eastern Seaboard, which is very interesting, is that we have this history of George Washington. We have this great tale told to us about, you know, the independence of America and our fight with Great Britain and our achievement of independence in 1776. Well, let me tell you what took place up until that year, was there was a group of Freemasons from Scotland that actually worked to overthrow the Peace of Westphalia. So the word Vispania,
Westphalia?
That's the root word of Spain. Pay attention. It's interesting because, look, Westphalia, now I'm going to say it, Vispania.
Ah.
See here?
I do.
Spain. Now, Vispania, it was not a territory. It was the name of a woman. And it came to be associated with southern Spanish territory, not northern Spanish territory. Northern Spanish territory is the Castellanos. These are the princes of Castile. They came to power through various revolutions, infiltrations, and intermarriages between the southern Spanish caliphs and the northern Spanish dukes.
Caliphs, what does that term mean?
So the caliphs were the reinstatement of the divided caliphates of the old Sumerian Empire that was overrun. So we have some of the earliest art coming out. They say Turkey, but it's coming out of the north. This is the Umayyad Caliphate.
Ah.
They came in, and the art that's very distinct on the mosque in Cordova, which is where the Roman dynasty dynasty of the caliphates were reinstored after the Abbasids overthrew the Umayyads. Mm-hmm. We're around 800 Common Era, okay?
Yeah.
We're going to get around there, but we're around 800 Common Era.
But the term means what?
Califato means caliphate. California means califato. They were enlightened spiritual rulers that practiced Sufi.
And that's what they're referred to as. Practice Sufism.
Yeah, they practiced mysticism. They were like Sufi mystics.
The
they practiced
schools,
a mix of Islam.
The temples.
Yeah. So we have sure been having a lot of fun with this because we're doing actually anthropology and linguistics.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually trained in disambiguation of rock culture and language. So my best work in New Mexico that I did was, for example, was try to resurrect the voice of the Chaco Canyon.
Mm.
So the canyons are from 700 to 1300 Common Era, with the main change of power taking place around 1000 Common Era. At this same time, the main power changes in North Africa and the Middle East and the capital at the Rock of Gibraltar are also taking place.
Mm. No accident.
Yeah, there's no accident. There's a glyph that's very
purposeful.
Ancient. It's called the Secret of Two Partners. And it appears that a Coyote clan appears to the Eagle clan and ask permission to settle. And the Eagle clan, which is the great eagle, you know, the great feathered snake clan who is ruling the land, he says, you cannot settle until you migrate four times to the four corners. So he sends them out to delineate the boundaries of his territory. And this happened in Egypt, and it's on an ancient seal, one of the oldest seals found in the Mediterranean. It's called the Secret of Two Partners. And also, there's a seal that was found. It's a Cretan seal. Nobody's deciphered it yet. But it was found also with an upright woman with a bare breast and two snakes in her hand and the bird on her head. And so she's saying with her symbols, twin snakes, bird, twin snake bird. And that is in the Nahuatl language, Quetzal. Precious bird, guate, twin snake. Precious bird, twin snakes. That's what the rocks are saying. And that is also what the most ancient pyramids in Mexico say. So what we found in Mexico and what we find in Spain, there's a parallel here. And the history, the oldest histories of Spain before it's Spain, are all these legends of like these underground caves, these underground secrets that, for example, Rodrigo de Guadalajara, he entered this one cave and said, you know, nobody can cross here. Whoever enters here will be cursed and the people will come and attack you that actually were here before you. And this is a reference to the Moors and the fights between the Moors and the northern Visigoths over Spain.
You know, as you're speaking, and then we'll go back. I just have to digress. And we're going to go explore further the Bush connection and all of this. That family legacy, I've had a lot of people on giving us more information. But we're going to learn more about the Muslim connection and the fact that the war in the Mideast, Iran, Iraq,
parallels.
Afghanistan, it continues today, and it is very purposeful. This family is
they were involved
on continuing this
continuing the war against the
war.
Muslims and erasing them from history and the culture, the high culture and the advanced
high
knowledge
culture
that they had, and the beautiful the culture of poetry. Look at what Hafiz means. It means he who could memorize the poetic text.
We don't really have that level of understanding with poetry in our culture. There are many in the culture here that do, but
so what's significant about what I was trying to set up was this politics in Europe. Pay attention to politics in Europe, and if you assume international relations, which is part of my expertise, I also hold a master's in international politics from a university in Amsterdam. I put my basic assumption in a relationship, and then I look at politics, power politics, and then I look at art. So I can see that there's an interconnection, interrelationship. Now, why? Why am I trying to stress this separation so you can look at Spanish history more discreetly and not just assume that everybody came from Spain is Catholic? Because all the way to Zaragoza, which is a northernmost city in Spain, and León, it was Muslim ruled. Now, the Muslims slowly lost territorial control of Spain all the way until they were completely deported from Spain. And where were they deported? Were into their territorial possessions in Mexico. The famous Zayd, the champion Zayd and Don Quixote, his daughters married into the princes of Mérida. in the Yucatan Peninsula.
Merida?
So he was deported, but his family became landowners here. And they already had these territorial possessions as Spanish land grants.
The truth behind Don Quixote now.
Yeah, so I guess the point that we're trying to push is that the mansions are haunted. Why? We have a curse on Santa Cruz. Why? We have a complete obliteration of the Moorish history of Santa Cruz. Why?
Mm-hmm. Why?
Why? Why? And to this day, so the parallel, look, the assassinations of the Castros, April 22nd, 1876, Governor Joe Castro is assassinated in a lynching by the lynch mob, the Bango Boys.
So that was up at
San Juan Bautista. That's where he was lynched. He was actually baptized in San Juan Bautista.
Now, I thought it was on the Pacheco Pass.
It was a stagecoach robbery. It was a setup that took place on Pacheco Pass. Nobody was killed. Nobody was robbed. But they set up a robbery. And in that, an enraged mob with mob mentality. This is the excuse, okay? The enraged mob with mob mentality accidentally lynched the governor, not knowing how important a man he was. And this is not true. They knew how important a man he was, but this was staged so that they
enraged
and make a mistake and be sorry, but later.
But it wasn't. It was also the mayor of what was
Brancaforte and
Villa.
Monterey. So the Bosque,
which
you
was
see,
Santa Cruz.
This is what's interesting is that the name Moraga is the family that held the Spanish land grant here. And if we go back, this name goes back to the Spanish Charlemagne, Carlos Moraga, and the Basques. Territory conquered by Charlemagne was here. I hate to tell you guys that Mexico is actually California, and it was a Spanish territory. Mm-hmm. That when the Spanish were conquering their territory, Charlemagne made it all the way to here. And then the Basque defended the territory. And the Franciscans were the order that replaced the Jesuits. Mm-hmm. So from 1823, there was an order to secularize the missions. What does that mean? It means stop the Jesuit push, mm-hmm. get them mm-hmm. deported from Mexico. Mm-hmm. So at the same time the 13 colonies are having their little powwow on the East Coast, Mexico's already decided that the Jesuit Order of Christ has to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they deport them all by 1776.
Now
they're
why?
Deported.
Why?
Politics. Politics, politics, bad politics. Ask yourself, what was happening in Europe? European politics caused the deportation from Mexico. When the Jesuits got in trouble in Europe, they were extracted from Mexico. They were replaced when the king in southern Spain came back into power, and this is Fernando Alcharcón. And this is what Aptos is named after. Ahuatos, I think it means Ahuatiwo. It means warm waters. It's Nahuatl. And Soquel comes from Xochitl, which means flower. And they weren't cities. They weren't cities. They're part of the Spanish land grant called the San Andres land grant to the Castros. And when Joaquin Castro died in 1838, he left it to his daughter, Rafaela Castro, who the historical society and the local libraries have made into a man to erase her husband from history. Because we don't
and
want...
And what is her name, the man?
Rafael Castro, a man.
And
they just took the
and the
actually there's a grave
say about Rafael
that he was the last heir to the land grant, and that Klaus Spreckels married the youngest daughter, and that's how Spreckels comes to own Aptos Village.
And what was her name?
Well, the forgery publishes her kind of close to what it was. They call her Agustina Marie or Augustus Marie. But her real name was Maria Antonina, and she had a twin sister named Maria Atanasia, and that's Latin. Their mother was well-educated.
These names are so important, and they can be read upside down, sideways.
Well, this is interesting.
Taken
is that
way out of context.
Hines of the Hines 57 worked with the Bush family. They were Grey Friars from the Edinburgh Freemasons. They worked to overthrow the Peace of Westphalia. I know the dates don't make sense, but I'm talking through forgeries, and I'm trying to talk through history that nobody's going to tell you, is that Vespania or Westphalia can be a grand power.
Well, victors have rewritten history.
Yeah, the victors have given it to us differently.
And you know from an oral tradition in your training.
Yeah, and also a great interest in history. So I do minor in history, and I am bilingual, and I read more than I understand, but I do read indigenous languages. My expertise, though, is in material culture. And see, what we study in material culture, material metaphor, is the value that's structured in that inner relationship the human has with the earth, or what they build, the way they build, the way their doors point. Where's the kitchen? Where's, okay, which
is
way does the church
do
face?
In the Hindu tradition or feng shui.
Yeah, so
important.
If we get to the haunting balance. Then, so we have a curse on Santa Cruz. Why? We have a mission here that was not built in 1797 by Mr. Lawson, which is a forgery. It was reinforced. It was already there. The road here is more than 4,000 years old, and it extends all the way into the Yucatan Peninsula. There's archaeological evidence.
And that was built by Camino Real.
The Camino Real, that's the road I'm talking about. Well, we don't know. I can tell you is that from the years of 1700 to 1876, I'm tracing the military Anzurans that were controlling this route. Right now, the United States controls this route.
Just to diverge once more.
Yes.
I know you've spoken about the Anzurans, but can you just say a little bit more?
So the Anzurans are the royal southern Spanish families that are actually related, an interrelationship between the southern Spanish caliphs and the northern Castellanos. The dukes that became the princes of Castile. There's an old story of the seven sons of Lara Marquez.
Okay.
Look, it says, seven sons of Lara Marquez de las Navas Vecinas. The seven sons of Lara Marquez of the new vicinities. Now, these men were beheaded by the Holy See, which means that's the Holy Roman Empire. Well, they're Austro-Hungarian, okay? Be careful with
these
politics.
These Anzurans?
No. The Holy Roman Empire were after the Anzurans. So we're having a fight in Spain between the Northern Catholics and the Southern Muslims. And the Southern Muslims are Anzurans. Anzulin means blue, and it means they're in the royal line of the Prophet. Mm-hmm. So the Prophet produced 14 caliphs in his order, which means the blood of his own bloodline, before it was overthrown by the Abbasids in Samarra. With the overthrowing of the Umayyads, the Abbasids took power. This is where we get the Sunni religion, which it's one God and one prophet and no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rigid.
Sort of fundamentalist.
Rigid and fundamental. Shi'i religion has that Sufi bent. They're waiting for the 12th revelation of the last prophet, and that he can come like the Tibetan religion in another person.
Warring among each other too.
And, well, then the war, because who should it be? Through just scholarship? Like the Sunni would say, you know, one God and the Prophet through scholarship, and the Shiite who would say it was through the bloodline and the reestablish of the bloodline of the Prophet. So when it was overthrown in Samarra, the capital was rebuilt in Cordova, southern Spain. And the dynasty was called Ar-Rahman. And the Rahman dynasty ruled from southern Spain, and the temples, the mosque, are the same as in Jerusalem. The architecture is the same. Now, that's a huge fight in Europe over these kind of things, who the temples in Jerusalem belong to.
I know.
And Jerusalem, Jeru, is Jebu. And the capital for reals of Israel in history and antiquity is Samarra in Damascus. So they have us fooled even at the political level right now of what historically has been Israel. Israel historically is not in Judah. There's a separation. Judah was separated with the capital at Jerusalem, and Samarra was its sister city with 10 other cities with the capital at Damascus. Samarra was destroyed. The capital moved, I guess, to Babylon, south into Iraq. Also moves into Cordova, Spain.
Just as our capitals continue to move.
We have the resurrection, the reinstatement of the dynasty, and then we have its livelihood until 1325 with the sacking of Seville, the southern Spanish cities. Mm-hmm. We have the last sacking of Grenada in 1492. Then we have the deportation of the Muslims completely into Mexico, and the northern Spanish follow them.
Oh.
Junipero Serra was a spy. He came and he spied on the Castros. The Muslims were already here. Why do we know this? You know what we found? We found the evidence of the Moorish temples on the eastern side of the Santa Cruz Mountain. There were Moorish temples on the eastern side of this mountain. There was a sanctuary there that's been absolutely destroyed. And there's a cemetery there now called Harvey West. Why would they call it West if it's the east side of the mountain? These paradoxes proliferated in Santa Cruz, because what happened is that Santa Cruz is not a city, but they coveted Santa Cruz so desperately. The land was so beautiful, and the construction of the city so wonderful.
And resource rich as well.
And resource rich and wealthy.
The water,
and monarchs
agriculture,
still here.
Yep. Wealthy, very wealthy.
So the Magnolia Rose had more than 100 rooms, and now it's dismembered into 5 different pieces, and it was dismembered, and the pieces were separated and moved to construct a city.
Can you talk a little bit about how it was destroyed?
Okay, well, first let me tell you that the Moorish Cemetery on the eastern side of the Santa Cruz Mountains, if anybody goes there, just be careful because there's a huge curse. There used to be a Moorish sanctuary there with a very high and advanced Sufi culture, which means that the destruction of what was there is still present. Look closely, there looks like foundations in that cemetery where all the headstones are held. Now, I'm going to take you up to the Mission Hill that also faced southeast, the mm-hmm. original church. This is also haunted. Why? Because Mr. Hines himself took the destroyed bricks after an earthquake in 1857 and inverted the building 180 degrees so that the front, where actually the precious bodies were buried on the western side in a habit, Franciscan habit, were left underground, and the church was moved.
What's the reason for doing that?
This is black magic of the Grey Friars. The Grey Friars from Scotland, mm-hmm. if you think about the Grey Friars Cemetery in Scotland, it's one of the most haunted cemeteries in the world.
I
don't know what this
know
means, but
that.
It's almost like a portal of evil because they
portal.
Could practice very wicked things here. So not only was there ritual in the construction and destruction of the houses, but in the histories destroyed, and then there was witchcraft done with the murders. So Book 2 documents 14 murders of the Castros done actually systematically by Alfred Frederick Joseph Hines. And yes, it's the Hines of the ketchup. Don't let the misspelling fool you. Listen.
And why don't you give us those other spellings?
So his name is, Hines, H-E-I-N-Z. That's the ketchup, and everybody knows him because he's the land grabber of the Mexican tomatoes and everything else. The land, the women, the churches. He raped many women. There's a lot of incest. Out of the 4 women he raped each of 2 more generations of children after that, of those his own children. His own children became his own grandchildren. Yeah, so this man took the bricks of the Mission Hill in the earthquake, inverted them. Okay, and then Sir William the Scot, which is actually his name, his actual real name. So he's a Henderson from the destruction of the Botswick Brig. Mm-hmm. His real name is a Henderson. Hearn is German. The word is German, mm-hmm. but he was a master of disguise. So the lie is that they're Irish. So this is where we get the word Neary, Carney, Perry, Leary, Hine. Hine, H-I-H-N.
Very common names in this area,
H-I-N-D-S,
too.
Hines, as on the Hines Victorian Mansion, which we can talk about, which is a piece of the Magnolia Rose and very haunted. Hearn, H-E-A-R-N-E, which is on my family tree. This is the spelling they left me. And Matilda and Lori Hearn, which are Hines' 2 oldest daughters. Their children married, and those are my grandparents.
And you have been trained to decipher different names and spellings.
So lexicography was my work. I wrote mm-hmm. dictionaries professionally. Mm-hmm. Those dictionaries are not just a handwritten dictionary. They actually process and parse. Mm-hmm. They were done for the Department of Defense when I worked in New Mexico at a research laboratory there. And these are very sophisticated parsers. So I learned very much about language. So I also hold a PhD in cognitive psychology, which means I'm a linguist as well. Mm-hmm. I've worked for 10 years as a linguist. What we pay attention to is the evolution of language.
Yeah.
So there's an evolution of language, but also the staticness of a literate language to trust so much in the print media that they're expecting the print media to be more true than the oral language or the oral history,
well,
which is
ignorance.
Much older.
There's no opportunity for a lot of people to delve more deeply into this. And that's why I've
asked
you.
No, and it's hard.
But I just want to get back to the temple and how that was distorted. It was such a power spot for beauty and amazing, wise teachings. It was a portal for that. Sufi.
The Santa Cruz
and I suspect
Mountain.
Other
religions.
At the time, they weren't necessarily termed religions, but teachings.
They shared space up there.
They
did. The Mission Santa Cruz was built as a Jesuit, as a Catholic church, and it faced southeast, and it was up there. On the eastern side was a cemetery. That cemetery has been destroyed. It was destroyed right after the governor and the mayor and all their family were lynched and murdered in 1876. Then by 1877, 1878, we have the rape and pillage of the Southwest with all those stories of Carson, Kit Carson, mm-hmm. and Billy the Kid.
But the Apaches.
Then, yeah, by 1880, we have them getting ready to wipe the cemetery down, to take the cemetery out.
Boy, they had everything planned.
And those stones went into the foundations of the Moorish temples on the eastern side. But the bodies were not moved.
Ooh.
So above on Mission Hill, where the little children play and there's a school up there, that used to be a cemetery.
And some of the bodies are
I believe
still
that there's
there.
A mass grave still down there. And what they did is to destroy that cemetery, they destroyed the church. They inverted it completely to the west. So the church that's standing up there is nothing of the original. The original church is now called the Rodriguez Neri Adobe. It's the oldest adobe up there. And that's the recycled bricks of the original sacred church. And they don't tell you that. It's been inverted, which means the back is where the trash is.
They didn't just murder people. They actually took energy and twisted it around. They Buddha was neither good nor bad. They made it extremely evil and destructive so that these forces continue. And I do want to go back to Magnolia yeah. Rose and the houses, because I promised everyone and I want to hear
yeah.
more. But what can we talked a little bit last night about the Nazi symbol and the recent riot here.
Oh, my goodness.
Do
okay, so let me tell you how
that?
We look at stuff from an embodied perspective. We don't look at the language. We look at what the body does mm-hmm. with the material culture. So that means the social institution, the main street. Santa Cruz has been created through a series of forgeries and stolen mansions. So Santa Cruz was not a city until 1877. Look it up in the old library.
I know, it was Villa Branciforte.
Villa de Branciforte was the city. And Santa Cruz was a private university, a private ranch, and it also had, I don't know, businesses. It had a train up through Davenport. It's a little different. I have several pictures. So there's mm-hmm. still buildings there, but it's called the Ranch of Refuge, and it's private property of the governor's father and mother. And this is the family of Rodriguez Real, which means the royal family of Rodriguez de Guadalajara, the guardians of God's flask. It was a Spanish land grant given to the Rodriguez Real family that mm-hmm. actually made the land grants to the Castros. So the Rodriguez were the daughter of the Viceroy of Spain. Mm-hmm. And the Empress of Mexico was here in the 1820s. We still had monarchs, but
what
we had...
What was her name? Because she was very...
Maria Pilar.
Prominent in your Maria Pilar.
Uh-huh. Her bones are in San Francisco in the Mission Dolores. And if you want to go visit her, we know where she is. If you walk straight in the cemetery and you turn to the right, there's a stone that says Rosemary Vasquez and George Castro. And those are two characters in my book that we've detailed their lives. They went missing in 1838, and their stones mark the bones of Maria Pilar.
We are going all over the map. I hope everyone can follow us, because we have a tendency to do that. But to get back to the bodily felt experience and what we walk around in of the outlay
okay,
of our street,
so
the architecture.
This is what happened. They took the Magnolia Rose, and they after they murdered the people in there, there's very many murders that take place in this building. So we have the murder of Carrie Bean that you can read about in my book. We have the murder of Alice Sullivan, who was one of Hines' daughters living in an orphanage that got out in 1873, was married off to a porter, and then assassinated 3 years later in the Magnolia Rose. This is how the money went into the Porter family. The children that actually lynched the governor, they were the Williamsons. They had a bar in Felton. Alexander Pacheco, in retaliation for killing the governor, assassinated them both. But these children, even though they died, are maintained on the Huggins forgery, which is the Wells Fargo forgery, as living. And the people that they married got the money. And this is how Mary Agnes and Klaus Spreckels helped move the money.
Ah.
Yeah. Mary Agnes
Amazing.
Was the wife of Klaus Spreckels, and she ran an orphanage.
That was a little confusing in the book. I had to go back.
Yeah, she ran an orphanage at the Winchester Mansion in San Jose. That was the capital of North Mexico, built by the son of the Mexican president, which his name is Uribe, we say, or Iturbide. That's how it's evolved now, but it's U-R-B-E. And he was the son of Julius Augustus, coming out of the southern Spanish ports from Cadiz, which is 1 hour from the Rock of Gibraltar and 1 hour from Madrid. It's a very important port in southern Spain, ruled by the Moors under Alfonso el Sabio up until 12 or 1320 something.
The history. So to get back to the Magnolia Rose and then to the riots here, but Magnolia Rose, What was its significance? It was...
It was a landing site that connected by waterway to the Mexican-Spanish White House that was
the
Rispin
Mansion. Which was the Rispin,
you said. Okay, let me tell you the right name. We call it Rispin, but yes. I found it. I found it.
Right.
I found it. I found the original pictures, too, when it was standing. And they're published in my book, and the book is online, and the city will not let you even see these things. What they published that used to be there are forgeries that are photoshopped.
Well, and that makes me wonder about our local historical society and historical societies elsewhere. What are they hiding? Who is ultimately in control there?
Yeah. Well, Heinz became the proprietors of the libraries, and his family, which their name has slightly evolved, is the family Heath. And the Heath division continues to publish the forgery on Rafael Castro. It's in the library. You can go read about Colonel Rafael Castro and how Klaus Spreckels married her youngest daughter and inherited the San Andres land. Oh, my goodness gracious sakes alive. Let me tell you, inside the Klaus Mangels mansion in Aptos Village, Mary Agnes' picture is hanging there, and she's a little redhead. And she's hanging between the two actual in-laws of Rafaela Castro, who was murdered there. That was land grabbed. It was private property.
Is that in Nicene?
Yes. Marks? Nicene Marks was her backyard. Her children played there in those waterfalls.
My favorite place.
It wasn't a state park. It was private land grant, a Spanish land grant to the Castros. It wasn't free to go and go there. Those bridges entered private property, and they were well maintained and controlled to protect her. And she was protected by one of the governor's sons, James Riley. But it was really a girl disguised, and that's Alexandra Pacheco.
I remember reading about that. She was amazing.
Yeah, she's so pretty. She's so beautiful. She had these beautiful blue eyes.
And why she chose that name?
Well, because the Wileys were the local site. That's the maiden side of the Bush family, are the Smith and the Smith Wileys. These are very established publishers called John Wiley and Son, New York publishers. They sell us every textbook we use in the university. This is where the money went.
Who is controlling our education?
And they are controlling our education. So she didn't want to be killed. So she picked a name close enough to someone you wouldn't want to accidentally assassinate.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and it was his name was John Wiley, and his brother's name was Robert Wiley. And Robert Wiley inherited the governor's properties up on the Blue Mansion that's on the hill that's called the Wiley Mansion. It still has a plaque maintained by the Santa Cruz Historical Society referencing the forgery of the Wiley family. I would dare them to put up the truth that it's the Rodriguez house. Can they spell Spanish? You know, do they know? No houses have their Spanish names here. And they were not built in the 1880s by these Anglo-Saxons or Germans.
This was all Mexican land. They had to be, how could they all be erased? They were murdered.
They erased the governor.
And what I also found interesting, too, was Samuel Prescott Bush.
He was here.
Became the senator in Ohio after we were talking Rutherford Hayes. Became president, and what was his association with all of this?
So what's interesting is
this
if anybody
all Santa
has
Cruz, folks.
Yeah, this is
it all happened
here. Santa Cruz.
It was a major port, a naval port, lot of wealth. That's why it happened. Strategically located.
Exactly, strategically located, controlled by the Anzorins, which comes from Azulín, which means blue. They controlled the Camino Real, which goes from the Gulf of Mexico all the way up to California, comes all the way up here into San Francisco. It leads you right to the Mission Dolores, right? So what was the question?
But Rutherford B. Haynes, what happened? Who also stole the election.
Yeah,
the Bush
so there
family.
Was a set of stolen elections that they stole them exactly as they were stolen in 2000 and 2004 or 2003.
Yeah. It was two.
They were stolen the exact same way. The same states, the same families and the same states participated in this. And they already had it down. Yeah. So what they did is that they conspire to say that there's a problem in counting the vote. Okay, this is how it works. You three states conspire to say there's a problem in counting. We need a recount. They create the problem. And it was Ohio, Florida, and I can't remember the other one, but it's the exact same one of the Eastern Seaboard.
No, I
think it's New York, but I'm not sure.
No. Was it New York?
It's another Eastern Seaboard state, but I know there's Ohio, Anyways, it's in book one, documented very carefully, are the elections of 1876, 1877. And this is when the Republicans came into power through a rigged election where the Ohio Senator, Rutherford Hayes, or Weatherford is also his name.
Ah.
His daughter is Hazel Hayes, married Sam Houston. So she's Hazel Houston.
Sam Houston.
Yeah,
Houston.
These are powerful people, powerful interrelationships.
Yes.
History
few,
of colonization.
In the States, anyway.
Gosh, it makes me think about the Botsford Brig colonies. You know, the ancestors of the Bush family come from Freemason.
That's a Boston name.
Yeah,
Botsford. I'm from Boston.
Brig.
I didn't know that. My gosh.
1626 to 1723, they assassinated 1,200 Franciscans in Scotland. And then this is when William the Scot puts his famous name on Scotland. It wasn't Scotland. John Williams or James Williams the Scot,
mm-hmm.
That's where we get the name Scots Valley.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, that's where we have the architecture of the church. It's distinctly Scottish Freemasonry. Yeah, it's distinct. So that's what I'm telling you, they were sharing space. Like maybe there was, because I mean, there's
sure.
a Catholic church up there. There's
yeah.
a Scottish
yeah,
church.
Yeah, we're not sure.
Or school.
It's a theory. We
can construction.
Pursue.
Right. We know that the construction is Scottish Freemason. Of the mid-1700s.
And the importance of bricks and the power of bricks incorporating the five elements, air, wind, fire, water, and air.
Hines' ancestor is a Scottish Freemason. I'm not sure if he's Scottish himself because he also said he was Irish, and Hearn comes from the German.
So you don't know. No one knows because of what he said. He claimed so many.
But they spoke Latin, and they worked in Italy. And they worked for the Holy Roman Empire, and his compatriot was named Gilbert Smith. And Gilbert Smith, this is the maiden side of the Bush family, and he says with one woman, he had 13 kids, and then with his next woman, he had 20. It's not true. You see, Hines raped four women and each of the children of those women and had eight children. So how did Gilbert Smith get 30? Because he raped a lot of women.
Same
he
person.
Was a priest from Italy. He was a Freemason. He worked with George Washington. And he worked with the Hendersons, the Botswicks. These are all Freemasons from the Edinburgh Lodge that assassinated the Franciscans, 1,200 of them, including Juan Portola. That's our road here. Juan Portola
yeah.
was a soldier. He worked for them. But Juan Portola, it comes from the word Capitola.
Yeah.
He was a leader. He was a guide. And our road here is named after him. And he was also one of the first ones lynched by these Freemasons. Gray friars. What does that mean? Gray. It means they're not black. What's mm-hmm. friar? They're priests. They're not black
gray
priests.
Flocks.
But they're in the middle.
In the middle.
Well, they're not black magicians. And they're not white magicians. They're gray magicians. And Mary Agnes, which ran the orphanage at Winchester Mansion, and the wife of Klaus Spreckels, which was the pseudonym of Samuel Prescott Bush, her name was Mary Agnes Breyfogle. That comes from Greyfogle, or Grey Friar.
So we've got Wells Fargo going all the way back to Scotland.
And then what
Scotland
happened
today.
When they assassinated those
I'm going
those
to have to listen
friars.
To the recording of this show later so I can
figure
going so
it
fast.
Out. Yeah.
Like, there's so much here.
Well, this is where they got the money. Don't think that on the 1734 Mayflower, when all the colonizers yeah. were coming over, that the Robin Hood didn't have money. He had a lot of money because they had just overthrown what was before Scotland, the assassination of the Franciscan order there, which also had grants, land grants, and Spanish Hispanic Vespalia families. And that money they stole, George Washington, let me tell you his name, George Watson, became the benefactor. He was an orphan, quote unquote, because he was one of these children of the rapes by Gilbert Smith, the maiden side of the Bush family. He had 30 or 40 children in his lifetime. This is Mormon colonization. This is how the Mormons... This is how the Normans colonized. N-O-R-M-A-N.
But when did the Mormon religion
N-O-R-M-A-N. It's all about colonization and conquest. They had multiple wives.
And of course, they
had
have
multiple
an amazing
women.
Genealogy resource.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably
and
why.
And one of the main priests. So the accountant was named George Watson. He was the one that handled the money after the overthrow in Scotland. And William the Scot puts his famous name on Scotland. And now we have the birth of the nation of Scotland. Okay? But there's a massive amount of money that they've stolen. And this money comes with George Washington as he comes into America. And any of their descendants were to bear the name Watson. So this is where we get the name Watsonville, because Hines worked for his father. These are Hendersons.
And yet we've heard it came from someone who just marched in.
Oh, Cole, yeah, a Watson. Soldier that came in. What, they gave him
nowhere,
a year before his actual
birth.
Just
the East Coast. I think I'll just explore the area. Oh, I'll discover Watsonville.
I'll build roads and schools.
I discovered it. Yes, aren't I a good man?
And his property and his names are right on top of Tiburcio Vasquez, which is the actual Basque and the oldest corn grinder on the site of Rosemary Castro's adobe in Monterey. That's where Colston's property is. And the other forgeries, you know,
take
that...
Take me there.
What?
You have to take me there.
Well, yeah, I'll take you there. What's interesting about George Watson is that Hines, with one of his rapes of his own offspring, which he was raping Alice Sullivan, that's Elisa Huggins in the Huggins forgery. He was raping her, and that pregnancy wasn't his because she had a secret boyfriend. Remember George Castro?
Yes, I do.
Well, George Castro's baby, they was named Coleman Watson, and he was a very wealthy heir. So part of the particular of getting this money from George Watson, the accountant working with the Henderson and the other Grey Friars in Scotland, was that your benefactor had to bear the name Watson or Herzog. And this is the Hertz or the Heinz mansion. They're still here.
Now, where
Hearst,
were those rulings?
Same family.
Where were those rulings put into place? Who made that decision that it had to be?
They
those
made
two
this
names?
Decision before 1723. And this is even before they come into the Americas and start their so-called 13 colonies and separation. It's a forgery, too. I don't believe any of it anymore. Now that I can see through the California history, I don't believe Eastern Coast history
and learning
either.
From you the past few weeks, I'm really questioning. I thought I knew quite a bit about history, but...
Well, and what's interesting is Herzog became a plantation in Louisiana.
Herzog.
They own it. But look, it's spelled backwards, God's dead. Herzog? Backwards, God's dead. And they overran
and that's done intentionally.
The temple. They overran the sanctuary. He was a reverend. He was a preacher. And these are what
blasphemy.
The preachers were doing in the German-American run schools after the Mexican-American War.
In shutting down the truth of those teachings to the mass population. It's exactly what happened.
Yeah, we got the destruction of the Moorish temples. Who's ever going to say that there was such a thing as a Moorish temple on the eastern side of the Santa Cruz Mountains that made that mountain
and
sacred?
There were others. Yes, it was.
So it's
and
cursed.
That, and it, the energy came into the Santa Cruz itself. So can you say, we only have 15 minutes, but can you say a little bit more about the dismemberment of the Magnolia Rose? Who was there when it was supposedly burned? You told me that that was...
So anybody? Yeah.
And then the riot
okay,
that happened here.
I'm going to try to do that. Okay, let me tell you. On April 22nd, 1876, the Bango Boys checked in to the Magnolia Rose and never checked out. The Aptos Museum in Aptos, they hold the hotel registry. It doesn't belong to them. It was donated by the family Swift. The family Swift, great-great-grandfather, was like the grandmaster of the Freemasons. Like, he was a very high grand dragon or whatever they are, of the Order of the Eastern Shriners, or these Freemasons and secret societies of Oddfellows. They probably participated. The Swift have an investment in maintaining the false history. They donated that hotel registry, and I asked for it. I said, that is public. That should be for me to see. I want to touch it. And the man let me look at the archive. I know all those people now that checked in. What?
I want to go there.
Well, all the people that checked in 1876 stayed for 3 months after those murders. And there's everybody before that date is missing. And then for the next 100 years, there's not a single Mexican name registered in that roster. That's the Spreckles Mansion.
Wasn't the building burned?
They staged a forgery of a fire. That mansion was dismembered and moved around to create the city of Santa Cruz. Wait a minute. It was moved to the other side of the San Lorenzo Real Rodriguez River, and it was opened up. Santa Cruz has a curse in its roads because the mansion, the Great Magnolia Rose that connected to the Mexican White House when the capital of Mexico was here under the Anzorins on the Spanish land grant to the Castros, the families that were really the owners were murdered systematically, and that mansion was dismembered and moved. Okay, 14 bedrooms went to Aptos Village. That's the Bayview. Now, the other pieces made it to Santa Cruz on the other side of the river, and they're opened, which means they're positioned around like a circle around Front Street and Pacific Street in downtown Santa Cruz.
Listen carefully. Try to visualize this and see what it makes.
The roads of Santa Cruz enters and exits form a swastika. As you can only enter one way Front Street, and you can only enter Pacific through Laurel and go north.
I know, it's strange. I always felt that.
Yeah, and through water, you can only go north, and then you enter Pacific West. If you pay attention, these form the western and eastern bands of like a swastika. Material culture. I'm not trying to you know, get elaborate with anybody. I'm just saying, look at the way we built.
Yeah.
Look at the way we interact with our cities and our roads, and pay attention to what we've done to create a city out of a forgery and a stolen history of the Mexicans here. The mission at the head of that street has been inverted 180 degrees. The bell tower that was on the original school that has the Scottish architecture, it was a university when it was Mexico up there. Mm. The bell tower's been taken off and interned completely around, and it tolls under a water.
So what does that mean?
It means that underneath the bell tower is nothing. It's a school of our nothings. It's the evolution of the Ku Klux Klan. There doesn't have to be boundary, education, rules. Look, they took the bell tower off the school. They moved it on top of nothing except water. They took the Bayview, which was on top of the hill in Capitola, off the mountain. Mm-hmm. They put on apartments with just water. They moved the Magnolia Rose from the Esplanade. And when they moved the Magnolia Rose off the Esplanade, they put bathrooms, just water. If you see what they did, they took the Magnolia Rose into five pieces, and then they moved it across the San Lorenzo River and opened it up, spread it out. They spread it out around the city of Santa Cruz between Mission Hill and the ocean. The part at the head of town is the Mission Santa Cruz Hill. Then you also have the Heinz Victorian Mansion, which is right by the railroad tracks on Chestnut. That was a piece of the Magnolia Rose. If you follow Front Street and Pacific to the end and you look up, there's an upside down door with an upside down cross that just jumps off the cliff. If you exited that door, you would surely die. That's a piece of the Magnolia Rose.
Gosh.
And then the house right next to it, up on 3rd Street, the nine main bedrooms called McLaughlin Mansion, that's a piece of the Magnolia Rose. And it was, in other words, do you see how something that was together, all is a beautiful mansion connected by waterways to the Mexican White House, doing international diplomacy and
waterways.
A wonderful landing site?
And that's why we see so many canals here.
Well, the canal on Brancifordi, that brought
off
boats
of Market,
and they closed it up, and they won't. And the way that you drive over the bridge, you can't even look in to tell that it was human constructed.
I used to wonder what it was.
It brought boats
looking
in.
Looking at it, it was so odd.
It made it to Lexington. There used to be a tunnel under the mountains that connected San Jose to or Los Gatos to Santa Cruz. That was destroyed, and that's a city under Lexington. That's a drowned city. But I think that's where the canals went. You must have come out by train, and then you picked up a boat there. And then the boat would bring you to the ports.
Yeah.
Because they're big enough to bring water.
And I promised everyone we'd talk about the spirits that still inhabit these mansions.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a little experience of that last night in Aptos, the Bayview. But can you say a little bit about what, I mean, the people were tortured and dismembered as well as the homes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine traumatized spirits.
Very traumatized spirits.
Who knows what happens? We really don't know. But to die with that kind of horror and then trying to release that soul, that spirit from that
nightmare.
Well,
we keep them trapped, too, by killing them in a house and then opening the house and mm-hmm. then putting the roads of Santa Cruz in a pattern that's actually a clockwise swastika. Because the Mother Earth symbol is also a swastika, but it goes
the
other
way.
So it's spinning the energy the wrong way. Yep. It has us walking on the streets in a perpendicular to the ocean in the middle of these open and dismembered houses. So as we spin the swastika, mm-hmm. the dead cannot...
Shopping in the middle of Santa Cruz, you have no
idea what you're doing.
I don't
watch the rioters. The rioters are coming. Turning north, breaking mm-hmm. all those windows, coming back and going back, the same pattern. The police meet them and only reinforced their pattern. It was a pattern dance and their partners. That's how you can interpret a dance. And a dance where the people engaged were hypnotized. Did you see how they don't even respond? The drumming and the sound is symbolic.
Sure.
And it says alcohol, drugs, violence, needles, overdose, revolution. And the kids...
That's what they were saying?
That's what they were playing. And then these kids were walking, and then they ended their riots after breaking the glass, which is also a symbol. They walked the pattern of a swastika. The police entered...
And some of these kids probably had no idea.
No, it was International Dance Week.
Some
I saw many
innocent.
Of my students
many
there.
Many were innocent.
Yeah. But also that it was like a hypnotic, very... witchcraft in a way. But where they met at the end was at the empty school, the bell tower of nothing.
Oh,
and they partied
the
there for almost
nothings.
An hour before the police even got there. The police didn't even come till it was over. They let them do it.
I had heard that the police were told there was something else happening.
Let them make an excuse at the last minute. There's a piece of video online where the men asked him, why weren't you here an hour ago? It's been going on an hour.
What did they say?
The police said, well, we were overwhelmed. There's too many of them and it would have been too dangerous for us. You know what? At the back of that crowd were men with ball caps protecting. Pay
and now
attention.
We have 5 new police officers.
It was a reinforcement of terror.
Yes.
And it was no dark or black or Hispanic people. There was a black man you can see on the video, and he's the one that was picked up, but he was in the very back and he was armed. And he conveniently said he did it. Like, how nice to put a face of color on something that was actually, if you look online, they're all white.
And why did he say he did?
His last name is Hines. Pay attention. Yeah, it is. And they're everywhere, which means these Mormon colonizers have multiple children and they're all in place now. They're all in. That's why the governments are starting to test us, to see how much they can do, because enough of these politicians in alliance with the government and corporations and big money are now in place and they're all related.
Mm-hmm.
And to have these power positions like in the city, they're old money. These are old families that have distorted history and have used the unofficial or the official.
It's not just happening here. It's happening all over. Now look at Arizona and the law that was recently passed.
Well, that's what's happening, right? Look, Moraga, Arizona, Castro Moraga. They had the power to give land grants all the way to even the Native Americans all across the Southwest. It wasn't the Mexicans or the Catholics that destroyed the Native American culture. It was the invasion of the Americans after the American Civil War that brought their tactics from the South and practiced them on us over
the
here.
Tactics from the South unknowingly,
they pulled the rug out on very young lives and very beautiful lives. And then they erased the governor from history because they won't dare say that a Mexican-Spanish man continued to be elected in Santa Cruz and continue to govern. The first governor is Matilda Hines' daughter, which is actually this man, William James, or James Williams. What a great...
We don't know.
We reference him as a psychologist. We refer to him as the first psychologist. William James. Well, I have to tell you, Peyton Lafayette. Those are the men. Their name is on the landmark at the head of town. Let me tell you about the hauntings.
But we only have 5 minutes. So
okay, I'm going to tell you specifically. Juan Jose, the governor, haunts the adobe up on Mission Hill. He dedicated his life to that orphanage before he was lynched. He was lynched in San Juan Bautista. He was hung on the tree outside the Castro Breen adobe. If you visit that tree, you can take flowers. Alice Sullivan was Hines' daughter. It was a rape of Rosemary Castro. She haunts the Hines Victorian mansion. She was assassinated in that piece of the mansion and she followed it. Hines is trapped in there with her, I'm sure. Mary Agnes or Mary Mangles, the wife of Klaus Spreckels and Klaus Spreckels himself, they haunt the Klaus Mangles mansion in Aptos. That house belonged to Rafaela Castro and she was ambushed there and murdered there.
Now, people that have the ability to hear spirits, do you know what they've been saying?
You mean like people
What do they hear from these spirits that are trapped?
Oh, well, so we have the little girls who actually live in a piece of the Bayview, and there's certain rooms that they just can't sleep in that are extremely haunted. The Bayview Hotel just had like the Ghost Adventurers come in, the paranormal team. Yeah, they loved room 3. You got to see room 3 and room 9. Room 9 never existed. It used to be a staircase that connected the Bayview down the mountain to the rest of the Magnolia Rows on the Capitola Esplanade. So when they moved it and they closed it,
yes,
and then they opened the door to the other side, many spirits got locked in there. So they don't know how to get out because the doors have been inverted on all these buildings. So the high school, they closed off the entrance and they inverted it to the west. Now, the mission, they knocked it down. They put a new church on top of the parking lot, left the dead under, and inverted it 180 degrees and made it an orphanage. And if you go look under there, there's an unearthed structure that looks like an excavation that wasn't put back. That's a hole that leads to the train that's underground, and that's how they disappeared children. And then the train goes right in front of Heinz's house. And Heinz, he murdered somebody at least every 7 years. He was a murderer. He was a murderer, but he was a practiced one, and they were, it was a lust for blood and conquest, and they went from one end to the other in no time.
We're referred to as mercenaries today. And you think of
the first
Albert.
Congregational minister to Santa Cruz in 1873. Welcome to your congregational ministry. It was not good what they did here.
Oh, no.
And under the German, see, the German run Catholic Church. So he took the name Hearn, which is German for mister. It means mister. It doesn't mean anything else except mister, mister, mister. But he put it everywhere. Neary, on the Rodriguez Neary. Yeah. 1 minute.
Oh, we're going to have to wrap it up. I want to have you on once a month,
yeah,
Julia.
So we can
we'll
iron
continue.
Out the hauntings because it's so complicated.
And you'll be in volume 3 or 4. It is. And we can also share some of what you've learned about the victims.
Yeah. The next one will be just the houses then and now because we've uncovered so many houses. We still found them, but they've been moved around. And we're going to show how they were and how they are now. And you they're know, beautiful.
I think what I'm going to do is have you on for 2 hours the next time and then open up the phones for any questions or something. Would you?
Yeah.
We can talk about that too.
Yeah, we can. We'll do good. We'll have fun.
We will. Thank you so much, Julia.
Okay, cool.
And are you going to be having those talks? Do you think?
Oh, the lecture series? We
yes,
have
the
to first put
series.
A class together. I think the material's probably too dense. So we need to make a flyer that's more simple. Yeah. But we get to do the lecture series all the time, which means we invite everybody to the Bayview to come and eat and have a drinky-poo. And it's a wonderful space. And the owners are actually really amiable. Italian and Portuguese, old schoolers from the actual old country. So they're not your typical Aptosian that you might come in and say, hey, this belonged to the Mexicans, and you might get your butt kicked on the way out. They actually welcomed me in, and they showed me the whole house, and they're actually very, very generous.
I met them last night.
So come and see the Haunted Baby Hotel, everybody.
Yeah. You'll be in for quite a treat. Trust me in that. All right. Our next guest is going to be Lewis Bickford, and he's going to be talking about the warrior tradition, the Native American warrior tradition, and what is happening with Native American vets today. And in the meantime, I am going to play the dance.
The Pueblo elders have lived through many hardships, but they always have a twinkle in their eye when they talk about the dance. My grandma always says, now when your arms and your legs are strong, now is the time to experience and experiment with the dance. I visited many cultures, and I think it is a dance that keeps them alive and keeps them together. This is called the dance. Thank you.
hope. When there is fear, there is love. When there is hate, there is peace. When there is suffering, there is the dance. A dance, a dance, a dance of hope. A dance, a dance of love. I dance, a dance, a dance of peace. I dance to dance, I dance the dance.
Tickling the Belly of the Bees from the heartland of Santa Cruz, and we're going into our second hour, 2 to 3, and with me is Louis Bickfer, and he is with the Department of California Veterans Field Service. He is an officer, and he does a lot of outreach work. And before we get started, I just want to say that historically, Native Americans have the highest record of service per capita when compared to any other ethnic group. They have a real tradition of warriorship. We're going to learn what that really means and also what these veterans can do, what services are available for him. This is his passion. I met him at the Indian Market about 2 weekends ago, and we had quite a conversation. I was very impressed with his knowledge and his heart, how much he cares for his people. And I'm going to put him on right now. Are you with us, Louis?
I'm here, yeah.
Hi,
if I can, if you don't mind me, just a little directions to get started.
Yeah.
I don't work with the Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm actually a volunteer, and I work with the Native National American Indian Veterans.
Oh, sorry about that. I was looking at...
That's not a problem. A lot of people, because we work so closely with the Veterans Administration, think that we're tied together. But in effect, what we do when we do outreach, we've done such successful outreach to our rural communities that the VA people actually volunteer to come with us to help us and assist us. So that's a great enterprise we're doing.
And yes, it is. And that's
so it works really well. So I didn't mean to do that, but
no, I'm glad you did. It's an important distinction, and I want everyone to know who you are, what you do. I don't want any inaccuracy there.
No. And
but what got you started?
You know, I started with the little VFW post in my little town of 114 people in Colville, by Yosemite. And you know, I just looked around and realized that a good friend of mine had passed away from problems with PTSD in Ancient Orange. Nobody was helping him. And I realized that so many veterans don't have the information, don't have the means to file for the benefits they have for them. So I said, you know, it's point of my life. It's time to give back. Mm-hmm. I'm 100% disabled Vietnam combat vet. My wife and I are both field service officers with the VFW at the state level. And because of my heritage, I'm a Chippewa. Depends if you're French or English. From the Anishinaabe, if you're Indian. And I'm from the Little Shell Band Chippewa, from Montana. But so what we ended up doing, we took this little start we had, and we started working with the VA doing outreach at the VFW post. And it has grown from there to where we're doing, took the National American Indian Veterans, the new organization. So we started with it a year ago. We were able to take and do a letter of understanding on the state level between the VFW and the National American Indian Veterans in order to train our people, process our claims, and allow us to get out to our people and help them.
You know, I'm having a little difficulty hearing you. Are you on a cell phone?
No, I'm not. Is this just better?
Yes, that's a lot better. What
yeah,
do you do?
I tend to talk softly.
Oh.
A lot,
all
softly.
You have to do is speak up and we're fine. All right. There you go.
Anyway, did you catch any of that? Or
yes,
like
I did. I just had to strain my ears a little bit, so I was wondering how the listeners were doing.
I apologize for that.
That's all right.
Yeah. So that's how it all got started. And
And can you say a little bit about the statistics?
Sure.
And then the blood quantum, you had emailed some information that I thought was
real
important and why many are not being treated.
The along with my saga where I started, I was able to take and put together a paper that I presented at the state convention with the VFW and said, you know, we're missing all these veterans because the... The American Indian veteran is the least likely to come to the government for help for obvious reasons.
Oh, you're fading again. Keep that voice up.
I'm fading again.
There you go.
Okay,
louder.
There we go. Sorry. Anyway, I presented a paper and I put the facts together to present a paper at the state convention for the VFW in order to present my project, American Indian Outreach. In doing so, I was surprised. California has the largest Indian population in any state of the union. There's 450,000 of registered in the census. And Now, that's a little bit misleading because registered in the census means that you're probably an enrolled tribal member, mm-hmm. Whether you're originally from California or not. The reason being, until this very last census, it never asked you if you were a part or a half or a quarter or whatever of any kind of descent of American Indian. But
wow.
So most of us would never put that down. Because we've always been told by the government, you know, if your blood quantum is not high enough, you're not an Indian. But in truth,
wow.
You know, all of us are anyway, because we're all descent of, whether been proud of it, whether you're German or Norwegian or Indian.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking at the numbers and doing outreach last year and came up with some surprising numbers. Of Indian descent, there's probably closer to 3.2 million Indian of Indian descent in the state of California. Of that, 12% are veterans, which is a huge percentage
wow.
of veterans for any population. And of that percentage, 25% are women veterans, which again is huge. There's several reasons for that. One of them is that we have always respected our warriors
mm-hmm.
and women or men within our societies, within mm-hmm. our culture. They've always been honored.
And I'd like to get into that at some point, too.
Sure. Anyway, I'll run amok on you here, so you just ask me questions as we go along here.
So the statistics were skewed, and due in how someone is determined whether or not they're Native American is by a blood quantum.
Right.
And other ethnic groups don't have to submit to that.
For instance, blood quantum... I'm not an enrolled member of my tribe because I'm only 7/32 Native American that I can prove
mm-hmm.
through documents, and I have to be 1/4 to be enrolled as far as the government's concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm an unenrolled member of my tribe.
And therefore you're not eligible to take advantage of any
No. As far as the government's concerned, I'm not an Indian.
Yeah, and yet you know you are. You
well,
were raised.
Of course, and I was raised that way, and
exactly.
Everybody where I grew up in South Dakota knew I was, so,
mm-hmm.
You know.
It's strange, indeed.
Yes.
And it's another way of separating people.
Yeah. I have a wonderful T-shirt I bought that says it very well. It says, I'm part white, but I can't prove it. And if you think about
it.
That, it makes sense.
It does.
Know? Yes.
Oh, so given that, so given the statistics and the
mm-hmm.
skewed blood quantum,
right.
many Native Americans are not given the opportunity to learn what's available to them, and that's where you come in.
Yeah, what we're trying to do is we're trying to build an organization, like say it's Young. We're just having our, if I may mention it, our first annual gathering, what Anglo-Saxons would call convention, we'll call a gathering, which is going to be this Saturday,
mm-hmm.
first time in California, of our membership of the National American Indian Veterans. That'll be attended by the National Commander from South Dakota and the his second in command, who happens to be the Secretary of Veterans Affairs for Arizona. So very, very well-respected men. And they'll be coming out for this. What we have is a picnic and a potluck.
So it's a spring gathering and potluck
spring
picnic.
Gathering.
It's
yeah,
the first annual.
Yeah.
And it's going to be where?
At Lathrop Park.
I'm sorry, say that once.
Lathrop Memorial Park.
Lathrop.
Yeah, Lathrop is in between Tracy and Stockton and I-5.
And is there a website that our listeners can go to get information about?
You know, unfortunately, you know, we're looking for somebody who would like to donate their time to help us develop a website.
Oh.
Who would they
contact?
Well, they could contact me. I'm the vice commander of the National American Indian Veterans. And also the service officer. I do all the training of all the veterans as well.
So do you have
help other veterans.
An email that people can write
yes.
to you?
Sure.
And what's that?
My email is Louie, Louieb, like in boy, at wildblue, like wild blue flowers, wildblue.net.
America and anyone that wants to get in touch with you and talk to you further about this and about the gathering and potluck picnic.
Absolutely.
And a
Absolutely.
Website.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, the thing
that
we're at this point a new organization. We're out there. We're so busy helping other veterans that we haven't found the time to learn how to write grants or receive, you know, getting funding to help us do this. We just take it out of our own disability checks. Like I say, I'm 100% disabled.
It's a shoestring.
There you go. It's a shoestring operation.
There you go. And it's amazing what you accomplish. I saw you at that powwow tirelessly, spending hours in the hot, hot sun, still greeting everyone with warmth and passion and really sharing the information, you and your wife. It was very inspiring to me.
Well, thank you, because it is something that comes from the heart.
You can tell.
Yeah, you really can.
And thank you for all that you're doing. And do you want to say more? And then I want to say more about this, but say a bit more about the gathering. It's going to be Saturday, May 20th. That's this Saturday.
This Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And what time?
It'll start at 10. In the morning, we're going to start our first lodges or posts, if you will.
Sweat lodges?
Pardon?
What did you say?
Lodges. Lodges are like, say, a VFW post or American Legion post. We call them lodges.
I see. I was thinking sweat lodges and EP.
Since we just got it, the organization was started in 2004, but until this past year, nothing has really happened in California. So now we've gone out. My wife and I went out last summer and did a powwow almost every weekend as service officers and writing claims and signing people up for health care and realized the huge amount of need that was out there within the Native population.
Mm.
So last year was our, if you will, our initiation into the need. At the same time, we built membership and members to the point now that we have enough members, we can start forming local lodges. Now, what's wonderful about this is the local lodge now will be in the community, and that lodge will be doing the outreach in that community.
Mm.
And each lodge will have a trained service officer that will be working with the veterans and their families, cultural and spiritual, because we do all of it. Because we're Indians, which is a little more than other veterans organizations do. And because they know their people. They know the veterans that need help. They're able to cross that barrier and reach them. So this is why it's so important this Saturday to begin this process. This is our foundation. With this, we'll carry this thing to Southern California. That we're doing the whole state of California.
And do you find that there's a wide reception to what you're providing?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm just saying, is there a wide response, a wide reception? Are people hungry for it?
It's amazing. Most veterans, you know, and we help all veterans, not just American Indian veterans. Just a moment. Excuse me. So we help all veterans. But what we find is most veterans have some misconceptions. One of them is they think they had to be in combat to be a veteran. In reality, anyone that serves in the armed forces or in the uniform service is actually a veteran, you know, and has all the benefits. So that's one misconception that we help to clear up. The other thing is that most veterans don't have any idea what their benefits are. Maybe they've gone through their whole life and they've had a good job and health care and benefits and didn't need anything. And now with the economy, we're seeing a huge amount of people, especially in the 50s and 60s, getting less from their jobs and going, now what do I do?
Yeah.
You know, and so we're out there doing outreach, talking to them and telling them about the benefits and helping them get signed up for health care or service-connected disabilities that may have occurred while they're in the service, but they ignored it, didn't bother them, now they're getting old. Now that twisted knee is now full of arthritis. Now it's disabling as far as being able to be employed.
So given that it's now disabling, and at one time it wasn't, can they change their disability level from, say, 10% to 100%?
Well, yes, because if they were rated 10%, say, 3 years ago, and it has gotten worse and the doctor says that it's worse, then we go back and we file for an increase because the disability is worse.
Mm-hmm.
We do many things. There's the health care enrollment. A lot of veterans don't realize that there's health care out there. Then there's also actually the disability
compensation. What can you say about the health care that's available?
Well, health care, VA has a real good program for health care. Unfortunately, when we invaded Iraq, the president at the time decided in the same month that he invaded Iraq, he cut a lot of veterans off from VA health care.
I remember that.
By requiring a below a minimum income level that they could get in. If they were above that, they couldn't get in. So that had changed a lot. So it's county by county. The county I live in, which is up by Yosemite, if a veteran is single and makes $32,000 or less, is eligible for health care. And there's some deductibles and things we always look at, too, that go into that. It's not always cut and dry. If you live in San Francisco, it's
$90,000.
Oh. So it's county to county. It depends on your household income, not just the veterans, but the wives.
Mm-hmm.
Or the spouses, I should say, excuse me, because we have a lot of women veterans out there.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things are things that we have to know as service officers. And when I say service officer, really we're benefits officers. It's just been tradition that we offer service to veterans, so they call us service officers.
Mm-hmm. And don't you volunteer in a clinic, a health clinic as well, and aren't you training individuals to do that as well?
Well, actually, what I was doing today, and probably a little more prepared
pulling
for you.
Pulling everything out of you.
Pardon?
I'm tooting your horn. I'm pulling everything out
of you.
Oh,
thank you. And actually, I keep talking over you, too. It's terrible.
I'm talking bad over manners. You, I think. Bad manners on me. I have a tendency to do that. I'm it.
My wife and I created, my wife is also, like I say, a field service officer at the Department of California level of DFW. And she's the executive director for the National American Indian Veterans. So she, of course, is my support. And without her, I'm good at talking, but I'm not good at the detail work and getting,
I met her, too, and she told me to talk with you. Initially, I was talking with her, and she's just a rock of Gibraltar. I know, with a heart.
She is.
Both of you touched me.
She's the calm one in the storm.
That's well said.
And the storm's always around me, because I'm doing stuff. But yes, once a month, VA Palo Alto drives all the way out here to Coltonville, and we established 2 years ago a rural outreach clinic.
You established what?
A rural outreach clinic, where they actually go out to the rural communities to bring health care to the veterans. So we became a pilot project here in Coltonville.
Wonderful.
And that's like, for them, I mean, this is quite a commitment. That's what, a three and a half hour drive. One way. So we held that today, and I've left one of my service officers down there to take care of things, so I came to talk to you. They come with a doctor, and we get them enrolled in health care. We take care of any claims or disability or pension or whatever else we can do for them, as well as getting a doctor to see them. And I've been honored to be appointed to on the committee. The Rural Outreach Committee for VA Palo Alto Healthcare as a community partner for American Indian Outreach.
Wow.
And that was a great honor. It allows me, coming from the rural and coming from the native community, to have that input.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very receptive. It's wonderful. So we've been doing this for 2 years. Now they've got funding for a primary care rural outreach. So Coltonville will become the first in the state of California rural outreach primary care, where the veteran can, using telemed, can just come into the VFW and into the office there, where all the equipment is, and the technician from the VA will be there, and do all the vital signs and stuff, and they'll be able to talk to their doctor, and they won't have to travel an hour, hour and a half.
Oh, What a service. You're really blazing trails.
People. You know, it's we are, and it's just, I think it's the climate. I think it was the right time, you know, and I had to be the right person in the right place. And, my wife and I, we realized they don't really know what to do with us, so they just come along.
You just don't give up. You're very persistent.
No.
Now you have a whole lot of others behind you helping you out, and they're...
Yeah.
You're not going away in the squeaky wheel.
No,
you know?
No.
Thank goodness.
You know, I have a vision, I think, and that vision is that one day in the near future, we will have trained service officers in every Indian health clinic and within every of the 221 tribes in California.
It's a beautiful vision. I'll hold that with you.
We find that, you know, that the VA has the desire and the ability to come out to the veteran. But they have to have somebody in the community to say, okay, they're coming on the third Thursday of the month. Now, let me go out and put the posters up. And let me put the flyers up. There's no local radio station. There's no local newspaper. And let me go talk to all my friends and neighbors and cousins and get people in here to see them.
Mm-hmm.
Then it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to have that liaison in between the community and the VA to help them do their job.
You've had to learn a lot to bring this all together unless you had some of these organization skills and interpersonal skills and how to navigate bureaucracies.
Learned a lot, you know.
I bet.
In a previous life, I was an engineer. I did contracts for heavy industry, but, you know, then I came to Coldeville when I was 40, which is quite a few years ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was a local goldsmith.
Oh.
But now I have retired.
Different trail.
It worked twice
together.
As hard.
But you're following your heart. You're really behind it.
It's
touched you, and you're listening, and you're doing amazing work. And something else. A few of my friends are members of the Gourd Society.
Yes.
Can you say, are you a member of the Gourd Society, or can you say a little bit about that?
Well, actually, I'm not. I have been invited. But, you know, it's one of those things that I was very honored, but I don't have the time.
Yes.
I have this thing that I'm doing,
mm-hmm.
and it's all-consuming,
mm-hmm.
because we work out of my four-room cabin, and, you know, this is our office, and this is my wife's the executive director, and... you know, we just load up the camping trailer and our tents and go out and do outreach. So the Gourd Society is part of, and we were going to talk a little bit about that too.
Yes, and just the tradition of warriorship. Well, I wasn't going to forget
it. Right. Yes, and the thing with this, the Gourd Society are veterans at every gathering and every powwow. The first thing that ever happens is they honor the veterans.
Mm-hmm.
They'll carry in the flags and the ceremonies that are done. And that's always been that way.
Mm-hmm.
So now if you think of your young kid like I was in South Dakota, didn't have any chance of going to college,
mm-hmm.
Needed to get out of the poverty I was in.
Mm-hmm.
And here I look at what's going on with these veterans, it makes you want to join.
Sure.
Even though you don't have any idea about world politics or anything else, you know.
I can agree with you there.
Pardon?
I can agree with you there.
Yes. So, you know, and we've always respected our warriors. Now, and that's where the Gourd Dancers come in. The Gourd Dancers, the scarf that they wear, which is a long red velvet scarf, came from a tradition in the Plains. And that tradition was that scarf and this warrior societies and these Gourd Dancers, that what they would do is that they would take their lamps and they would stick it through that scarf and pin it to the ground as a last resort to protect the village and the families against the enemy. And they stayed there and fought to the death unless another one of the society came and removed that lance from you. From the ground and released them from that duty.
Amazing.
So that is the Gourd Dancer. So that is the meaning behind these things we see.
And one of my friends, he is involved with his local Veterans Association, and he was saying that he doesn't support, personally, the present wars. And he said the only reason some have fought in his family is because it's the land that they're fighting for. Not necessarily the nation, the United States, but it's the land.
The what?
The land.
The land.
The importance of the land and his people.
Yeah. You know, I had an old doctor, an old co-doctor. The co-doctors, you know, there was more than just the Navajo.
Yes.
There was Sioux, and there was Hopi, and a lot of different co-doctors.
That's what I'd heard.
Yeah. But anyway, I was talking to one that says, you know what? We weren't even citizens until 1927. Why would you be interested in joining the military? You know, if they wouldn't even recognize us as citizens till then, when everybody else was freed in 1865.
Mm-hmm.
He says, well, the thing of it is that, you know, I already know this enemy. my white neighbor, right? The last thing I want is somebody that comes from Germany, and it gets worse.
Yeah.
It makes a point, you know?
It does. When that's all you know.
Are we fighting for politics? You know, are we fighting for a cause? The traditional warrior was not...
And fighting for a livelihood. Sometimes, when there are few, fighting for a livelihood, a means to make a living when there are fewer options.
Right. And an interesting thing with the warrior and warrior society, the warrior was, well, in American Indians, right, you didn't attack your neighbor and wipe him out. Okay, you may go and steal possessions from him, or count coup, which means that you proved your honor by actually touching him without killing him, which was a greater honor than killing him. You know, it was a whole different attitude than the warfare of the Europeans, for instance, where they were trying to basically annihilate the other nation.
Annihilate and everything that's there that's alive, the land itself,
the trees, the
animals, it just wipe out everything.
Right. So the enemy was always respected. The other thing is, and let's see if I can find it.
And adopted. The children and those that were left were often taken in, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they were adopted, you know.
And cared for well.
Exactly.
And given respect and honor.
And made part of a tribe, you know. I have one little statement here, if I can find it real quick. I don't want to hold. But anyway... the other thing is that I find it's very interesting is that the American Indian has always, when he came back from war, there were ceremonies before you went and ceremonies when you came home. The ceremony you came home was a cleansing ceremony. The reason it was done is that the communities knew that there had to be a transition between peace and war, so that when you went off to war, you know, you had to have a different attitude. When you came back from war, you had to cleanse yourself of the terrors and horrors of war.
Otherwise, you'd bring it home, and the community would be infected.
And they would set you aside until you had this cleansing ceremony before you could actually enter the village. Now,
how brilliant!
That's PTSD treatment.
Yeah. Now, do you offer that? Are you offering ceremonies, or do you provide them for the returning vets?
You know, this is something that, as we go along and we grow, and unfortunately get funded and able to create these things. But that's part of what we're doing. You know, there was a program up in Oregon that the VA sponsored for a while. I had read about it, but it's long been closed down. And what it was is it was healing for PTSD for the warriors coming home. But it was done in a spiritual and cultural way that they were used to, and it cleansed them and helped them versus the traditional Anglo-Saxon way of dealing with mental health. And, you know, and here's something that's been done for centuries because they realized...
And what is the Anglo way?
Pardon?
What is the Anglo way?
Don't get me wrong, we have to go to mental health. I go to mental health because I'm 70% PTSD of my 100% disabled from two tours.
How can you not come back from a war and not have PTSD? I should just think it would be 100%.
Everyone does. Everyone does.
Sometimes just living in the inner city as well, just living.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of things that cause PTSD. Sexual trauma, car wrecks. I mean, PTSD is not just combat related. But as a veteran, we usually think of it that way.
So is there a different, how do the Native American veterans coming back, how are they impacted by the mental health system? Is it more successful for Anglos because of the cultural traditions? I'm curious, do you know?
Yes, you know, and this is what we're finding is that you'll find that the American Indian, and I keep changing this back between Native American and American Indian because they keep changing what we call ourselves. The American Indian will probably not seek help from a traditional source. It takes a lot for me to talk to someone to come into American Indian veteran, to come into mental health and talk to a psychologist or to take medication.
And why is that? I mean, I have my own
ideas. Because culturally, we were raised different. Culturally, we were taught, you know, whether we're reservation or not, you still have these things that, that are still part of you, is that we were healed through herbal treatment. We were healed through ceremony. We were healed through the sweat lodge and the releasing of our... It's almost like meditation. You know how meditation can relieve your anxiety and your problems and help you maybe step back from that problem and take a look at it?
Well, I actually
do the same thing.
Yeah, I've been to quite a few Inipis. I go regularly, and I feel that healing. That's my medicine. And I have a dear friend, teacher. She's a medicine woman, and that's where I go for healings.
Right.
So in that way, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Exactly.
But yet,
exactly.
So that's comfortable and going to the land, the mother being.
With
the animals.
And you mentioned something earlier, and I misunderstood. You said we fight for the land. We actually fight for the, you know, yes, but we call it the earth, the mother.
The earth, the mother. Yeah.
The mother.
The medicine.
The land to me is like the deeded stuff. You know?
It's like the what?
Deeded property.
Oh,
that's why I misunderstood
earlier. Oh, I'm glad we corrected that.
Yeah, we fight for Mother, for the earth. Mm-hmm. You know? And what heals us is much more earthly. Is that the right word? It's much more. Sometimes I'm at a loss for words to describe the feelings that you have.
I know. I would say it for myself. That healing goes deep. It doesn't just touch my physical being. It touches my spirit, my mind, my soul.
Right.
And I feel a deeper sense of connection to what is all around me and myself.
Right. I'll use an example, if I may.
Sure.
We were at Stanford Power doing an outreach. I had one of my service officers, and when I say National American Indian veterans, it's actually for all indigenous veterans. So that's Hawaiians, Guam, American Samoans, you know, it's for all indigenous veterans of United States troops. So I had this gentleman as a Hawaiian, and he was going to come help me. He's one of my service officers, one of our members. He was going to come help me in Stanford. He didn't show up, and he didn't show up, and didn't show up. So he finally showed up, and he got talked a little bit. He says, you know, I've been avoiding coming because I lost my infant son on this day, Mother's Day. And he's buried in the cemetery here in the Bay Area. And I went, oh, I understand. Don't worry. And then I said to Elmo Hernandez, who's our chaplain and our commander, who was the first Native American chaplain at the VA, and kind of broke that ground. So chaplain, then I had said, well, Elmo, you know, Glenn needs some healing. And so we got Marge Groh, who's a Miwok that works with us.
Oh, can you speak up? Your voice is fading again.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Marge Groh, who's a spiritual leader, and Elma Hernandez, who is our chaplain and a Hopi spiritual leader, took him inside of our teepee and did a blessing with him, and a cleansing and a healing. And he was in tears because he was raised that way in Hawaii. Because it's the same from the earth. We deal with things the same. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
You know,
I do.
That's the difference between what I call Anglo-Saxon, if I will, or European way of looking at things, and the indigenous people's way of looking at things.
The indigenous way is more all-inclusive. It is in that circle.
Yes.
You can see and understand in one moment, as opposed to having it more linear and separate.
Right.
It's a different way of being in the world, of walking.
Yes.
That's been I'm white, and I've been so blessed to meet many elders. I really have been, and attend numerous gatherings where I have amazing experiences, and I am eternally grateful.
Yes, yes. And I'm so glad you were able to share that. You had asked me a question earlier that I don't think I ever answered, is how are we received in the community, especially the Native community, with our outreach?
Mm-hmm.
The thing that is that, okay, I'm blessed, if you will. I'm Native American Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 100% disabled Vietnam vet with PTSD. So I can walk across that barrier.
Yeah.
I can talk to that vet. Say, you know what? You're a brother. We understand each other. But you know what? Been there, same place, different stuff. Whether it's Iraq, Afghanistan, World War II, Korea, Kosovo, wherever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
You know what? Come with me. These people can help.
Yeah.
And I can bring them in. And that's what we do. That's outreach.
You have that integrity, and you have that standing and the similarity. So you can talk to them where you can touch them, and they'll understand.
Exactly.
I couldn't.
Exactly. And we've been out doing this long enough that the elders at the powwows have stood back at first and went, okay. You know. And then the second powwow, third or fourth, they're going, they send somebody over to talk to us.
Fourth
or fifth or sixth, they come themselves, and this gentleman's 92 years old from World War II, and we filed a claim for him.
For
his hearing, you know, and got him into health care.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so.
Yes.
It's the staying, the course, and making the commitment, and following it through.
Yeah.
That's what makes a difference.
Yeah.
You know?
And you've got to train others to come up behind you to continue this work.
And we are all the time.
Yeah.
We've got 15 trained service officers out there. We're setting up to do 20 more.
Wonderful.
The Native veteran, once the light bulb goes on and he sees that we're real and that we can help and that he can help his brother, they step forward to volunteer more than any other group I've been worked with.
Well,
it's amazing.
It's an energy
taught
to give back. It's even
I had
just
a lady
take.
Drive from Chico to my little house here in Colderville, which is, what, a 4 or 5 hour drive, because she heard about what we were doing. She wants to help.
Touching.
You know, and that's Marge Grove from the Miwoks. I mean, these are the things that are happening.
Wow. It's just
And I
growing.
Just don't get that kind of response anyplace else.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
And it's just going to continue. You're feeling that need, and there is so much gratefulness. They can't help but give back. And when you receive such a gift, you have to give back. Or it will stop.
That's the circle.
Yeah.
You know, the best thing you can do is receive
that.
A gift and give it away.
Yes. And they know that. And if they don't know it, they'll learn it quickly enough.
Yes.
So you're not just offering them the benefits that are offered en masse through the VA. You're offering something very special with the cultural tradition.
This is true.
Again, you're creating something very new and different, trailblazing. And are you familiar? I know that there were various lodges, men and women's, at the VA Center in Menlo Park with Jack Hyatt?
You know, that unfortunately is all gone.
Oh, no.
Elmo Hernandez, my commander, was the first chaplain there and created the cultural center with a sweat lodge. This provided, at least in a small area, you know, if you're able to get there or if you're involved over there.
I went up there.
Yes.
I knew Mary. I knew
yes.
Mary.
Yes. But Elmo Hernandez, my commander, he's the Hopi spiritual leader I was speaking of.
Mm-hmm.
He's the first chaplain. He created that, but then he had a heart attack and severe diabetes, and he finally had to retire. And unfortunately, that's been closed. Now, why, I don't know, and that's probably a whole nother topic. The reason I don't get too much involved in that is that every community needs to have that veteran sweat lodge.
I know.
Every
I agree.
Rural area needs that veteran sweat lodge. You know, they need to have that in Eureka and Ukiah and Porterville. You know, it's nice that they had it at Pemmel Park. It brought that attention and visibility. But what I want to do is I want to take that same thought, but I want to take this to the veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Because most are not going to come in. We have to take this care and spiritual and VA benefits and the rest of it and take it to the veteran.
And you do that at powwows and where else?
We do that by going to powwows. We do that by being invited to tribal councils. We set up events that we'll go to. By forming our lodges, we will have then that same thing that I'm talking about on that community level within each town or city, whether it's the Bay Area, which has a lot of Native lives there, but are not being serviced either, or Ukiah or someplace else. And they will have the ability to create the things we're talking about in their own community. And then we've got something that can exist on its own. Because if you're going to build something that will last and stay and last and stand, it has to be built from the ground up. Not just built on one person or one person's dream, but something that
yeah.
everybody can encompass. And one person is just as important as the next one.
And each person has a different piece of the pie, a different perspective,
Absolutely.
A different
Absolutely.
Vision. So to include them all, you don't know what isn't. Everyone needs
right.
to be heard equally.
Right. And there's so much talent and so much help
yes.
and so much. And I'm being approached by so many different foundations that want to assist us. And, you know, it's amazing. As you can tell, I'm excited about this.
I know, but I feel your engineering background coming through. I'm full of fire. Yeah, and you've thought it through very carefully, and yet I sense that you're open to what else appears.
Absolutely.
In terms of traditional
Absolutely.
Teachings, you may be constantly surprised by the ways in which things are working out. How your dream is unfolding.
Exactly.
Yeah, and who shows up?
Oh, really?
I know.
I talked that long.
I'm sorry? No.
I say I talked that long.
No,
I didn't,
no,
I,
just,
know.
No, I didn't mean it in that way. Just in who's
yeah.
been showing up. You're probably thinking, I never dreamed this way. I didn't think it
would
work
out quite this way. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, I'm sorry.
The way it's working out. It's evolving.
Yes, it's It is every day. It's something new going on. I'm just astounded.
Yeah.
But that just says that the great grandfather has deemed that is something. It's a cause that needed to be dealt with.
Yeah.
And somebody just had to take the time to get started and get the ball rolling. And as it rolls downhill, it gathers speed and
yes.
volume.
Yes.
And everything.
And what powwows are you going to go to? Where can our listeners find you?
Well, you know, the next thing we're going to be doing is there's a Vietnam traveling wall going
oh,
to
yeah.
be here in the little community of Coldeville.
It's
up the road about 7 miles in the subdivision of Greeley Hill. And that'll be June 10th through the 14th. And we will have our service officers there and be talking to vets. And what a perfect place to find healing.
Yeah.
You know, so that'll be
my,
our next one.
I think that was at Indian Canyon. I don't remember when, but before I ever went there, it was traveling. I'm not sure if it's the same wall or not. And
yeah,
a friend
you know,
mine,
and I'm not either. One of our members, Jesse Salcido, when he got out of Vietnam back in the early 70s, helped put this one together. And so we decided that it would be nice to hold it in a rural area versus the city. And we have a lot of the tribes involved in helping and guarding and ceremonies.
And, it's a great project.
Yeah, big project. It's amazing. Oh. And, you know, Jesse's put this together himself. I can't take any credit. We're just going to be there to support him.
Now, you all do things in a big way. I must say, you do things in a big way. There's another piece of that puzzle coming in, or that circle. What a healing that
will be.
It flows. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up soon. My next guest, Dr. Darryl Babe Wilson, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's an amazing storyteller.
Yeah.
And,
I know so few people, really.
Oh, you're kidding. I bet you're meeting many since you've retired, though.
Pardon?
He's Pitt River.
Oh, Pitt River, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I haven't had a chance to get up there yet.
It's just south of Mount Shasta, and he knows the stories. He learned them from his elders.
Yeah.
So he's quite a treasure in this area. And he got his PhD, actually, from, I think it was the University of Arizona, and taught Native American literature for years.
And then I think he had a stroke.
Well, he's going to be on next, and you can listen to us if you want online.
Online?
Yes, you can go to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Google that.
Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Google it. And then click on Listen, and then from there, either click on Dial-Up or DSL. You probably have DSL, but if you're a rural area, maybe it's
I have satellite.
Dial-Up. I think that would work. I don't know. I hope so. And
well,
you can call
satellite's a little funny, but we do live at the end of the dirt road, so.
Oh, you're lucky. You are.
We are rural.
And I also want to say something. Well, Santa Cruz is supposedly rural, but it's not. I wish it were. I want to give another mention to the spring gathering and potluck picnic. You said that was going to be Saturday, May 12th, this Saturday, in Lathrop. And what's the name of the park?
It's Lathrop Memorial Park.
Lathrop Memorial Park.
Yeah. And it's a brand new park they've built. It's really easy to find. And they can always call me as well as go to my website. My website is my email address. Email is louie@wildblue.net. Or they can call me. My phone number, and I work out of my house. It's always on. 209-878-3369.
Great.
And we appreciate any assistance and help in this endeavor that we can. People would like to step forward and volunteer. That's what we're all about.
And they'll get so much back. Just meeting this man, you'll be amazed. Have a lot of fun. Gain a lot of wisdom. Thank you, Louie. And anytime something's going on and you want me to announce it, just give me a call and I'll send you a recording, too, of the program.
Oh, would you?
I certainly will probably be unedited. I don't know how to do that yet. And
oh, no,
so
no,
you
that's
can
fine,
edit
yes.
it or do whatever you'd like. Use it as you please.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And what a wonderful opportunity to be able to get the word out for what we're trying to do.
I know. I want it to get out. I really do. I'll try to let other programmers know on other stations, too.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Yes, and maybe you could speak at our local Vets Hall.
Pardon?
Maybe you could also speak at our local Vets Hall. I have some friends there.
Oh, wonderful. When we were at San Juan Bautista, we've been invited.
Michelle invited you. I was with her, I think.
Yes. And so just contact me. I'd be
happy
to speak at any organization.
All right.
I love to talk, as you can tell.
So do I.
And I have a mission, and that's to inform people.
Yes, you do, and you're doing it. Thank you.
I think that, you know, it's been used a lot, but it's so true. Freedom is not free.
How true.
Whether we care for war or not, we must always support our warriors.
Yep, absolutely.
Yes.
So they, too, can be free inside of themselves.
Right.
Free of that pain that tortures them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, we'll be in touch.
You bet.
All right. So stay tuned online, and you can hear Darryl.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow, that was Lewis Bickford and what work he's doing for the Native American veterans. He's truly trailing a new blazing a new trail. I'm going to go out and get my other guests. And in the meantime, I'm not sure what music's going to come on. Let's see. I think we've got Warriors on the Way. That would be appropriate. Let me see. Before I leave one, there it is. Thank you for listening. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're always looking for donations, and they can be sent to FRSC P.O. Box 7811-95061. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Like a feather, and way across the horizon, deep in the hills, thunder is coming, echoing valley. An elven king, gentle, his master moves in robes of wind. And the poet on your breath, sweeter than peaches, bitter as grandfather time, may slip past you in a rhythm and shadow, but is received between the lines. Liddy, 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 hey, ah, ho, ka, hey. Liddy, 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 yeah. Ring them bells, child. Ring them bells, child. No place like home, no place like home, and there's no place like home. Ring them bells for life, there's no place like home. Together,
Many eyes have beheld this hollow ground. In Lakesh, in Lakesh, the only sound.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Tickling the Belly of the Beast in the heartland of Santa Cruz, and I'm Janaea, and welcome to the third hour. Still with me, 3 hours is long, but you've got to stay with me because I have Daryl Babe Wilson on. He's an amazing elder and storyteller, and he learned the stories from his elders. He still remembers them. And he's also a scholar, poet, and a political activist, I would say, a humorist, and as I mentioned earlier, a storyteller. He is the author of The Morning the Sun Went Down and Two Moons, which I've been reading and rereading. Every time I read it, there's another level that reveals itself of depth and meaning. And he preserves these traditions and the cultural survival of the native nations. He's similar to Kopali. He traveled and worked with Indian youth, preserving their traditions and literature. He was involved with a writing and publishing program that worked with native children on reservations in the Southwest. And he is with us here. He was with us last week. And I'm going to have him back monthly. And it's a real honor to have Daryl Wilson here with me in the studio and his two sons, Theo and Sutero. Say hi, guys.
Howdy.
Hi, guys.
Get up on the...
Hello.
That's
Hello.
Theo and Sutero. They brought him here. So I'm really grateful to you both for getting your dad here. It means a lot to me.
Awesome. Well, you're welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Daryl, hi. Welcome.
Hello. Good afternoon. It's a beautiful day.
It certainly is. We're very fortunate. And you know it well. I want to start by asking you what your elders told you about what it is to be a warrior. We just had someone on who spoke about that too.
Yes, that would be fine. Can I first say hi to people in Santa Cruz?
Absolutely. And anywhere else
okay.
You'd like to.
Everybody in Santa Cruz, I wish you have a very nice day and the rest of your life. And some of you listening who may be my friends, just a special hi. Okay, getting down to business. The rules and laws that a warrior must obey are very strict, and they don't have anything to do with the Hollywood or the anthropological image of the native people anywhere upon this continent. You know, we're supposed to have blood dripping off of us and dancing around a burning wagon train and loving everybody we kill. That is just simply a total lie made up by Hollywood in particular, but anthropology took the lead for that. And I really have arguments with anthropologists, even though my brother is an anthropologist. I really have issues with that approach, that mentality, that destination. That destiny they assigned us and didn't assign to themselves. But when I was in the second grade, long ago, everybody knows me, that was long, long ago. I say I'm 200, but I'm not really 200. Just feel like it some days after I had a stroke.
Yeah.
But old grandma, she gathered me and my brothers and my cousins, probably about 8 or 10 of us, who run around in the summertime together because we're all about the same age, do all about the same thing, run all day, run all night, run all the next day. So we hung together pretty much, but she cornered us and told us it's a very important thing for us to consider for the rest of our future. And that was the rules and laws that a warrior must obey. And she began saying that a warrior is a man or a woman, a boy or a girl. It makes no difference. And then she started down the road. I don't have the list here, but she started down the list and started 1, 2, 3. So I'll give you 1, 2, 3. A warrior is strong, yes, but the warrior uses his strength to take care of the community, to take care of the tribe and any family beyond the tribe who needs help or needs responsibility or needs direction or needs support. A warrior can run a deer down if he doesn't have any arrows and bring the deer back and skin it and cut it up and divide it among the tribal people and those people in the tribe who don't have somebody to hunt or fish for them. He does the same thing fishing. A warrior is up before dawn. Before dawn, the warrior is also on the trail, taking food, salmon, deer meat, bear meat, or whatever, to the family over the mountain if it's necessary. A warrior can swim underwater, across a river, and back if that is necessary. A warrior is strong. A warrior is a good fisher. Mm-hmm. He fishes day and night, daytime with a spear, nighttime with a net. But he makes sure that everybody in the tribe or anybody in a family next door needs salmon or trout. He'll supply salmon and trout for those people. A warrior thinks with his mind and not with his brain. And the old people remind us the difference between the mind and the brain. The mind is all of the knowledge and wisdom and experience of the very first generation that has been passed to the next generation with their knowledge and their wisdom and their experience to the next generation, to the next generation. Thousands of generations ago, this purpose started. And the purpose is, so when we are born, when we were born, we were born complete with knowledge from many generations, wisdom from many generations, experience from many generations already inside of our mind. And our mind has nothing to do with our brain. The brain is a little thing that sits on top of your neck, and it does not have eternal wisdom or knowledge or experience has not been passed to your brain. So your brain functions sometimes. Most of the time, it doesn't. Some things you remember, some things you just simply forget, because the brain is a weak thing that you should not depend upon. So think with your brain, because your brain is connected to your heart, and if you listen with the ears of your heart, then your heart will learn much and transfer that wisdom or knowledge to your mind. It won't pass it to the brain because the brain will lose it or forget it. So the mind is very important when it comes to remembering the destiny that we were born into. Destiny has absolutely nothing to do with death, and it has absolutely everything to do with life.
Can you say a little bit more about the mind and how it functions, how we work with the mind, as opposed, it sounds like the brain is just a mechanism for memory, calculating, whereas the mind, is it connected to the heart?
The mind is connected to the heart, it's connected to the universe, it's connected to the land beyond the stars, where we all came from in the very first few days. We've, not that people forgot, but I'm not going to let them forget.
No.
But the mind is connected to everything, the sun and stars, the moon, the earth, the wind, the water, knowledge and wisdom, landscape wisdom. I say the mind is connected to that. The brain is connected to your neck. And that's all I know about that. I try to use my brain sometimes and, you know, it just doesn't work very good.
But your mind allows you to understand how things really work in the world.
Yes, how things worked long, long ago and how things are going to work long, long time in the future. Your mind is prepared for that. Your brain has got to wait till somebody writes a book about future and reads it to you, and there you might get something. I'm sorry I get so hard on the brain, but that's...
No, I think we're being controlled by the brain, run by little brains, as opposed to the heart-mind.
But connected to the heart, in this instance, is probably more understandable than connected to the universe. But it's easy to see how it's connected to the universe if you get up and get out of bed like you're supposed to, go out and look at the stars before the sun ever starts up, and you'll find out that you think, whoa, I'm connected to all of that, and then you think, we can only see just a very little bit of the universe, and it still looks huge to us. So our connection is immense. In our mind, connection is immense. Our brain connection is very small.
And through the mind, we're able to connect to life in the stars. And you told us last week the story of two moons, how moon was at one point like Earth, and then the two warring peoples, tribes. One was more aggressive and the other one was more peaceful, but overrun. And then it sounds like a nuclear bomb or something happened and exploded. Where does this knowledge come from?
Where does it come from?
The mind. Is that?
The universe is exactly full of knowledge and wisdom. And the old-timers cautioned us to get out of bed, get outside, and make friends with the universe, and talk with the universe just like it was an old friend, because it is.
It is.
We all came from the universe, all of us.
I know.
We like to think, oh, somebody twinkled their eye, and here we are, magically. It didn't work that way. We came through the universe. And it was a long journey to get here. And we don't have much time to prepare here. We have another long journey ahead of us. But we really should, at this point, do all we can to find out what we should be doing here and how we should conduct ourselves in the future, which is another part of being a warrior. It's knowing how to conduct yourself in nature, in society, with children particularly. The old ones say, travel with caution, always. Always look behind. A small child may be following your footsteps. You must lead that child in the proper direction to the proper destination. So we have to walk carefully when you walk on the earth. They said to walk like a mountain lion. Honey,
and don't you did
break
that
a
with
branch,
your father.
Don't turn a leaf.
I loved in Two Moons when you talked about your hunting journeys with your father, when you would get up at dawn and go hunting, and he taught you to be still as the mountain lion.
And what did you want? I'm sorry.
Oh, your father taught you how to hunt by being as still as the mountain lion.
Yes.
And you learned so much more just from that process.
Don't breathe. I mean, it's a become. Don't go into the forest. Don't go down to the river. Become the river. Become the forest. Be so still and so quiet in yourself, with good thoughts coming from your heart and your mind. And you can tell when this happens, because a little bird will come up and land on your shoulder or in your hair.
Yeah.
And it will.
Yeah.
But it won't do if you're going to jump around and turn on a jukebox, whatever you have you carry around, makes noise and things like that, crack limbs and throw rocks at it. Those things are just nothing like that, except the person doing it, I guess. I don't know why they do it. I almost got hit the other day. I come around the corner, this guy's practicing for baseball, but using a rock, and it looked like I was in home plate. He was really zeroed in on me. I thought, oh no,
Carol,
this is it.
Not you.
But he was throwing rocks. I don't know why. There's only a little river down there, and people walking around.
They're not aware, or they didn't choose to be aware of that danger. And in Two Moons, you wrote about, I believe it was Uncle Ramsey, and when he saw the fences being built, how grievous and painful it was to his heart.
Grandpa Ramsey's, his real name is...
Uncle?
His real name just slipped me. Juju. And what it means, it's a little spring where he was born, and the water is always coming up, and the grass is always dancing. And it was a little spring. He was like me. I was born out on the ground. He was born out on the ground long before me. But he was a handful of the wisest people in my existence. It seemed like he almost appointed himself to educate me, because he knew the school was not doing that. And if you look at landscape and human education and thinking with the mind, and then you go and you look at Dick and Jane as something to teach you, it really is a false prophecy. And I think education is really sometimes really ridiculous in expecting children to turn out to be men and women after they had a Dick and Jane thing almost all their life. So anyhow, I don't like education too much, because it is misleading, and it is...
Well, you really learned from the landscape. That is, your mind was able to access those teachings.
Well, yes, Ramsey lived in the landscape. I mean, it was all of nature really affected him. When he was young, he could get a drink of water anywhere, even in a horse track if there was water in there, or a puddle of water, he'd just stop and drink. Now, today, you stop and drink out of a running river, you're basically getting probably 50% of some kind of a disinfectant or detergent or other kind of a poison. And fish getting that, they simply die and wash out to the ocean. Frogs get that, simply die and wash out. Pretty soon there are no fish, no frogs. Birds drink it. They do something else, but there are hardly any birds left. But the landscape in Grandpa's time when he was a kid was really full. Mm-hmm. With herds and herds of deer, herds of bears, and migration and deer and bear and hummingbirds and things like that would just pass through the land, stay for a week or two, and all jump up and take off to somewhere else, and sometimes thousands of them. The geese, for instance, the big Canadian honkers, as we call them, used to be so many that when they were in flight, coming in for a landing or taking off, when they were in flight, they'd blot out the sun from sunrise until noon, and then they would be gone somewhere else. But now, today, everybody is really lucky if you can go and even see a goose. And if you see two or three or five or ten or 100, you're really lucky. You don't see deer in the herds like they are, because every freeway that's been built has been just simply a trap for murdering deer and little animals. And so the little things getting squished, rabbits and squirrels and little bears and little deers, the little mountain lions, they all get run over all the time because of these big fancy freeways and cars that are going out of control, and out of control mostly because they're being manned. The person behind the wheel is out of control, because there's no respect in there. And Grandpa Ramsey said, I'll say it again, and I love it, he said, it's true. The white man brought many diseases, but the bad one was disrespect. And when he was a kid, we just went through the water and through the deer's animal migration and things like that. But when he was a kid, the land was full of life all of the time. And then he come to about 1960 and looked around, and all of a sudden there's no animals, no birds, no geese. A few here and a few there, but not those big healthy migrations that kept the earth healthy in their cycle of either, I don't know, I keep thinking that they bring wisdom from the mountains down to the valley, and from the valley back to the mountains, and that cycle, wisdom down, wisdom back, wisdom, and I think that was just a beautiful, beautiful time to be alive. Mm-hmm. I wasn't alive at that time. Mm-hmm. The land was vacant when I was born. Mm-hmm. I was born in 1939, and it just wasn't much left.
But Ramsey remembered it, and he told you. Remember, in Two Moons, you write about the time when there were no fences and what he witnessed.
One of the probably spiritually most sickening of all the thing that civilization brought to my people was the barbed wire fence. But since then, it's been improved and improved, and these things that divide and keep everything divided. Things that destroy things are really streamlined and beautiful and big now, like the fences that are going up between Mexico and the United States. But when he was a kid, those things weren't there. And he was telling me the first time he saw a fence, barbed wire fence. Him and some of the tribe had been hired by some white man to build a fence around this white man's little house he built and a little property he had. And the Indians all laugh, oh, ha, ha. Fencing himself in. Look at him, he's fencing himself in. Laugh, laugh, laugh. Well, the next year, he hired the same crew to put his fence just a little further out, but clear around his house again. And he was fenced in, but he wasn't fencing himself in. He was fencing everybody else out.
Out.
And the next year, his land got bigger. And the Indians build his fence, laughing. Well, finally, today, you go up to that property, and you see there's 20,000 acres of land right there where he started. But his fence now goes around that 20,000 acres.
Oh, no.
And guess who built it?
Who?
All the laughing Indians.
Wow.
But that's what happened, the
building
fences. And fences just are not very healthy for anything. Animals and cattle and everything gets hung up in that fence and wire and dies right there. No food, no water. Horses get tied up and elk get stuck in there with their antlers and can't get away. It's just a lot of things are negative that has to do with barbed wire fences. It's true, it's effective keeping people out too. But no trespassing is a great idea. But it doesn't mean everybody no trespassing. There are people who can trespass, think it's absolutely right, and so does the sheriff. But there are other people who trespass and go to jail.
Oh.
That's not a healthy law, a healthy rule, a healthy practice. But it's still walking around healthy.
And it happens
gun
today,
on,
too.
With healthy bullets, too.
If you're a certain skin color, you can be stopped now and asked for papers in Arizona. And you don't even have to be fenced in. Well, that will happen soon.
The same thing happened.
July.
And if you remember,
in your own land.
In Nazi Germany with the Jewish people, that same thing happened. And I don't know why people aren't talking about how that turned into such a terrible, ugly, a misdemeanor to life. Totally. The politicians don't talk about it, and they really should, because that's where it's headed right now.
Well, you spoke about manifest destiny and how it is showing up today in this country. Was built, created on manifest destiny. Probably built and should have been part of the Constitution. Remember
really
one night?
I like to talk about manifest destiny because so many people think, and many people think, it's just true. They think that manifest destiny is something that you find in the Constitution of the United States, or then you find it in the Bible. Or you find it, you know, in a Bill of Rights. Or you find it in a Magna Carta. Well, that is just a totally a sickening lie, a totally absolute lie.
Yep.
Let's get manifest destiny straight. It doesn't have any meaning at all. First of all, last of all. But how did it come into being? It's not in the Constitution. It's not in the Bill of Rights. It's not in the Bible. It's not anywhere. It started in a newspaper in St. Louis. The editor's name was John O. Sullivan. Get out your web and write in Manifest Destiny or John O. Sullivan. They're the same.
Yes.
He was editor of the newspaper St. Louis, and he had absolutely nothing to write about. Sitting in a coffee shop, like everybody who has absolutely nothing to write about but have a deadline. They all run down to the coffee shop, sit there, get a napkin, and just scribble on it.
Yep.
That's what he was doing.
Law.
If you read his blogs and all the stuff he has on email and on internet, you think, well, he's a going machine with great ideas. He accidentally, just like Columbus accidentally landed here on land, he accidentally scribbled Manifest and Destiny together on a napkin and said, maybe I can write an editorial about that. And
that's
he did.
Simple.
And the next day, it was a doctrine. And if you read in a dictionary what a doctrine is, you'll find out it is not a law. It is not something great.
But this is a land of law. Man-made law.
But then it became a cry for everybody to create their own destiny, no matter how you do it. The best way to do is to take everything you can from everybody you know all of the time. And when
that's
you run out of people you can't take anything from, go somewhere else and find somebody else to take things from. My old people said that is just another way to continue stealing whatever we have left from the Constitution, because the Constitution allowed everybody to steal all of our land, all of our homeland.
Mm-hmm.
Manifest Destiny then allows them to steal our pride, our dignity, our honor,
yeah,
our respect, our responsibility, not just to our family, responsibility to the earth, responsibility to the moon.
Do you want to say a little bit more about that responsibility to the earth and the moon?
Okay.
Do it.
No.
Everybody expects me to answer every time very quickly, even
no,
in college.
I don't.
But I was taught how to answer questions so people can remember them. So that's why I sometimes take a moment to let people focus.
Yeah, you don't
and
have
not focus
to answer it right
on
away.
Me or what I'm going to say, but focus on themselves and what they're going to hear. So that's the
well, I'm
moment.
Putting a fire between us, and we're sitting around a fire. That's what I'm visualizing, and I see the red-tailed hawk and red-tailed fox.
Respect and responsibility are things that we really should cherish. The things that are worth going to war over. The things to hold, to cherish, to nurture. Respect and responsibility. Getting back to the rules of a warrior, a warrior's duty is to respect the earth, to honor the earth, to be responsible for the earth, to make sure the earth is as beautiful tomorrow as it is today. Mm-hmm. That is the rule a warrior lives by all of the time. Responsibility is taking care of. When the Europeans arrived upon this continent, there were this on right here where this little room is, and right there, wherever you are, wherever you're sitting, whoever I'm listening, whoever's listening, Redwood Forest here, 400 feet tall and 40 feet around, from the coast, from the water, from the ocean, 3 miles back past Livermore. And it went to Santa Barbara, and it went the other way to Oregon. And it was a huge, beautiful forest. You could walk forever under the forest and never fall over a branch. Reason being, because every fall, it was the responsibility of the warriors to go into the forest to pick up the branches and the broken limbs and the broken trees and put them in the pile, and when it started raining, to start burning those piles. So then the ashes go in to the earth to feed the earth, and there is no debris under that forest. And besides, it's awful thick in there. If you're going to go hunting a deer or something, you can't have a lot of brush in there. A lot of limbs are getting in your way, breaking when you step on them, things like that. You got to take care of yourself, too. Responsibility to take care of yourself, too.
When you get a broken leg,
but
it becomes someone else's
if
responsibility.
If somebody park, everybody goes up there and oohs and ahs about that. There are 4 or 5 big trees there. Used to be big trees there, clear past Merced, but it's just not there. Cut them down and use them to build somebody's house somewhere. Doesn't make any difference where. Cut the tree down anyhow. That's improving the land, according to the Bureau of Land Management. It is.
I know, in building dams.
There are Native people right now in argument with the government. So we love those trees. There are birds in there, and there are deer walking around in there. And there's squirrels. And
I know.
And they
there's
build
a whole
birds
life.
Build nests in there, and butterflies go in there. Little beetles are in there. And if you take the forest out, life goes with it. So leave our trees alone. Oh no, you the only way you can keep your land is to cut down the trees and show you're improving. And that's a big argument right now in federal court.
In the Shasta area?
Bernie Falls? In that area? No. No, it's not there yet. I don't think they land claim, forest claim, improvement claim is there yet.
Ugh.
But I think it's in the state of Washington right now, where people are saying, somebody come and help us, because there's something terribly wrong here. We cut down the trees, and we're almost cutting our life away from us.
Yeah.
And, of course, nobody wants to go help. Attorneys just don't ever come to help.
Oh, and they have the hemlocks and the
Bureau
and the
of
fears.
Indian Affairs, who's supposed to be the caretaker or the helper of the Native people, then is the culprit. You cut your trees down, and that improves it. And that's their thinking. And they're the one who is supposed to be helping people. I mean, if you read the directions to the Secretary of the Interior when it comes to Native people, he's mandated to care for the Native people, watch over their land, and things like that. But he doesn't. between himself and the Bureau of Indian Affairs, they find another way to take something from the native people. And there's not much timber left to take. There's not much land left to take. There's not much pride left to take. And there's not much dignity left to take. And there's no reason for responsibility if somebody cuts your forest down. So there's not much of that left to take because it started dying too. So here we are.
So what do you suggest? Where do people start to rediscover that dignity and that respect? It can be reclaimed.
What do I suggest?
Yes.
I never thought about suggesting anything.
Or what do you have to say about reclaiming it?
Reclaiming.
I have to think about
rediscovering it.
What is governance?
No. Rediscovering.
Oh.
Maybe we can write it down. He has some hearing aids.
Okay,
but we're
I've got a secretary over here.
Yep.
Writing for me for some reason.
Yeah. Thank you.
I can't.
Rediscovering land claims.
Rediscovering land claims.
That is.
How's that?
Land claims, you know, that is really a very important thing to talk about, and it would take an awful long time to really explain it so everybody could understand it. But if we go back to this guy Columbus, who was trespassing, who is still, his descendants are still trespassing, who never been welcomed here, weren't asked for in the first place, and didn't come with clean hands in the third place. Came here to steal and to connive and take, to butcher the people and destroy the homes and destroy the worldview, destroy everything. I can't figure out how that is a discovery or any such thing as an adventure. It was pure murder. Premeditated in sometimes, but pure murder. Whether it was the bandits and the pirates, it came with Columbus, or the bandits and the pirates, it came with Cortez. That's exactly what happened. Butcher, murder, destroy. Those things that Columbus could put on his ship and take back to Europe. Potatoes and different kind of fruits, tomatoes, and roots and beets, carrots. I took them back to Europe so Europe would have something to eat, and then they plant it so they'd have something to eat next year. And then they got wise. I plant enough to eat for a couple of years. In between those couple of years, we'll figure out how to make guns.
Guns.
We're peaceful people. But first thing we have to have in our hand is a gun. That does not make any common sense at all. But Columbus came with very dirty intention. The descendants of Columbus stayed with very dirty intention. And that was to take everything from everybody. When Manifest Destiny finally arrived, it was to take everything from everybody, from every native in the world. If you're civilized, Manifest Destiny means nothing to you. If you're a native, it means somebody has a right to come and take what you have, including your children. But we were talking about respect and responsibility. Well, respect did not come on either of the ships that were put out from Spain. And if you read your history, it wasn't Columbus, the Nina, and the Pinta, and the Santa Maria. There were 25 ships sent to the Western Hemisphere with the same order, get me gold. The king and queen needed gold. Well, they had enough gold. And guess what they needed? They needed to buy an army. And anybody out there listening, please get the log book of Columbus and read it, because I'm going to quote some of it and you're going to say, oh, he's lying. Mm-mm. Get the book and read it. Columbus was sent here. Cabrillo was sent here. Every ship that came from Spain was sent here to get gold for the king and queen of Castile. They needed to buy an army. 5,000 mounted, 50,000 boots on the ground. Well, then you should be asking, why would they want a big army? They wanted the big army. They needed the big army to march on Jerusalem and to quell the Muslim voice forever. Read the book before you say, oh, the Indian lying again. He said the Indian tell the truth. He lies first thing. Read the book. Read Columbus's report to the king and queen. Mm-hmm. The letter that he wrote in the Sea of Cadiz on January the 14th, 1492. At that point in life, respect was pretty much an orphan in the psychological landscape of Europe. And that attitude carried over to America. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that happened here was a terrible confrontation with the native people, who were already weakened, already dying because of the disease that came. Diseases. He and his bandits were infested with diseases from Europe. And if you get your history book out again and start reading, you'll find out that Europe was a very dirty, diseased place at that time. People went to the bathroom in the water alongside the ditch, and that was the best place for them. So the water is terribly polluted and full of disease. What?
We're going to have to end in a few minutes. It's time for our next news segment, unfortunately.
Okay, I know. Okay. Everybody, bye-bye for me.
No, wait. I want to add, not so quick.
Oh.
I want to invite everyone to visit Daryl online at his website, Haiditsula. How do you pronounce it? Daryl, how do you pronounce this?
Haiditsula.
Haiditsula. And that is spelled Haiditsula. And he will respond to anything that you write in response to what he has written. And I think there are recordings on there as well, more teachings. And I'm going to have him on, if he will come, once a month. I know he is very busy, and this is a real honor. He also teaches periodically in Stan Rushmore's class at Cabrillo, and is going to be at the Indian Storytelling Festival. I believe that's on the 19th of June at Indian Canyon. We'll have Anne Marie Sayers on again, I believe, the 10th to speak about that. So this man gets around, and you may see him at some powwows. But please visit him at his on-site blog or web page, Haiditsula, HaiditsiLa. And it is not easy for him to come here. He is a walker and has had a stroke, and so it's a real honor. He wants the people to know the truth, and he loves sharing, and he has a very sharp heart mind. I love him dearly. Omatakase.
You tell him about Haiditsula.
Yeah.
Be careful, or somebody will try to sell you a truckload of hay. That's what they did to me when I first tried to get it open. Where's my hay, Ditsy Law? I got everything, and a truckload of hay coming. So be careful and find hay, Ditsy Law. That means thought thinking, and pondering, and the final outcome of that thought thinking and pondering. That's what it means.
Ah, the thought gets transmitted, started. You shared that last week. And he's also involved with the Santa Cruz Indian Council locally, and I hope to have someone on with him at that point, too, in the near future. He's busy. I'm grateful that I got you here 2 weeks in a row, and I want to thank Theo and Sutero, your sons.
You're welcome.
Thank you, and Sutero. They brought him here.
Okay, we're through?
Yes, we are. Now, well, Palestinian news, okay, hopefully. Okay, Let's see if I can find that on this.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
This time goes so fast, I can't get my thought out.
Oh, my God.
Went fast, the news?
There it is.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Thursday, May 20th, 2010. Israeli troops kidnapped 12 Palestinians from the West Bank and continue to close the borders of the Gaza Strip. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Palestinian security sources said a number of Israeli military vehicles invaded the village of Tekoa near Bethlehem and searched a number of houses and kidnapped 5 youth from Al-Sabah family. The residents said their village is under a regular wave of nightly invasions during which Israeli soldiers break into houses, ransack them, and kidnap youth. Israeli troops also kidnapped 2 others from Ramallah. However, their names were not identified. In Jerusalem, Israeli soldiers kidnapped 5 Palestinian children from a Sawana area near the Old City. Local sources said one of the kidnapped youth is son of a senior Fatah leader in Jerusalem. The 5 high school students were handcuffed and taken to an Israeli police station in West Jerusalem. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinian officials expressed disappointment over Israel's decision to continue to ban medical supplies to enter the coastal region. Raed Fattouh, head of the committee in charge of the entry of goods into the Gaza Strip, stated that since mid-October 2009 until this day, Israel has been obstructing the entry of all medical equipment and medications transferred from the West Bank to Gaza. Among the urgently needed equipment are CT scan machines, incubators,